Is a gentleman, a gentle move. Hello everybody and welcome to this week's episode of Commander Cast. This is episode 162. We're recording on August 14th of 2014. We are your weekly source for community strategy and technology hosted on MTGCast.com and our home site, CommanderCast.com. Now, I understand a lot of you are probably wondering where William is right now, and me, personally, I'm wondering the same thing, because he was supposed to be here, but then he told me he wasn't going to make it. So he told me to sit here and try to run the ship, which is kind of what I do from time to time. My name's Calvin. I'm also known as Captain Resume on the internet, if you're looking for me. Let's see, I'm basically the producer slash editor for this particular part of the show. Or the website. I don't really do much for anything else. Like, I run the Facebook page, if that counts with the thing. With Judd, but I don't know. We'll get to that later. That stuff, that's like all in-credit stuff. But that's okay, because I'm not going to just sit here and babble on for like an hour and a half or whatever time period it turned out to be into your ear. Because I've actually got several people here with me. Actually, a couple. Several means like three, four. That's too many. That's way too many people. I'm babbling. Screw that. You know what? We're going to go straight on into our guest. Our first guest here that I'm going to bring on is Mark. He was on the show with us last week, if you remember. Mark, go right ahead and say hello to the people out there.
Hey, howdy, internet people out there. My name's Mark. I write for the site. I just started writing for the site a couple weeks ago, you know, so I'm still new to this whole thing. I'm still pretty much a podcast newbie. But thanks for having me on, Calvin.
It's perfectly fine with me. And we were talking about how you have that smooth radio voice.
Oh, my.
Yes, thank you. I try to do that. Well, you know, I got my late night gig from 3 to 4 on you know, the oldie station coming up. But I'm
that's the quiet storm over on WBLS, isn't it?
yes.
joining me and Mark today is another member who was suggested by one of you listeners out there. It's a gentleman by the name of Ro. He's someone we've recently gotten in contact with, and you know what? I'll let him go ahead and explain who he is to you in a moment. Ro, say hello to everybody.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ro. I'm Paperboy311 on Twitter, and I've been testing Planeswalkers as commanders.
Good. You see that? See that? We are doing everything we can to stay topical, or, you know, as best as we can. William made us do this episode, and after he called out, we had no idea what to do. But we're just going to do it without him anyway, because he sucks. So, Ro, let's get into a little bit of your Magic background. How long have you been playing Magic?
Okay, well, back during the original Ravnica block, I would play with my brother-in-law. I would play his decks. I didn't really build my own, and we just did the 60-card casual thing. Back then I was pretty much a Johnny Combo guy. I liked synergy and stuff, but I never really understood how to build a deck. And then when Scars of Mirrodin came out, we did like a kind of a league thing, a little casual league thing where we all bought packs, put them in for a prize pool, and built 60-card casual decks, played them, and I won that whole thing. And I was hooked.
He's just been crushing Magic ever since.
Yeah, and so I started, you know, he was always trying to harp on me to get onto EDH. So I took all those 60-card decks that I was building and just hoarded them basically into an EDH style. And I haven't stopped since. I built so many decks.
Yeah, I know that feeling. I remember back when I was in the process of writing for that one blog spot that I did when I first started. And all the various decks I had to, like, design to come up with. And I just cranked out deck after deck after deck, like, each week. And now it's like, I go to my house and I have like this gigantic white box with all my decks in it. And it's like, last time I checked, it was like, I'm pretty sure there's like 20 something plus decks just floating around there.
Oh,
and
wow.
I stopped making decks because I ran out of sleeves.
Yeah.
And did not feel like going out and buying more sleeves.
Now, once you realize you're dropping hundreds of dollars on sleeves, you start to get a little sad.
Yeah, I'm dead serious. It's like you get to the point where it's like, let's see, I've got like 20 decks. Dragon Shields currently run about like $12. let's, like, you do the math on the amount of sleeves for that. It's like, you know.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. When you start spending more on peripherals than actual cards, that's when you know you got a problem.
Yeah, right.
Like, hello, my name is Calvin.
Hey, Calvin.
Got a little bit of an addiction. I'm addicted to that magic crap. So, Mark, let's give for any of the listeners who are new to the show or didn't get a chance to catch last week's episode, you know, give us a quick rundown of your magic history.
Sure. Well, I started playing back in Revised, back when I was in, I think, middle school or so. My buddy and I just got into it. His uncle used to play, so we kind of got into it through that. And, of course, I got into Revised right after, you know, all the nice, valuable cards hit. So most of my, you know, when I started playing, then, like, right after Antiquities and then, you know, Homelands and Fallen Empires hit, then I just kind of dropped it because everything sucked at that point. Like, it looked like the game was going to go out. And then I picked back up again right before Scars of Mirrodin block, actually. I think right at the end of Eldrazi, like, right before M12 hit. And I started playing a little bit of Standard, and then I just kind of, you know, I went from there. A buddy of mine down at the shop, you know, started talking about this crazy Elder Dragon Highlander thing, and at first I thought he was pulling my damn leg. I'm like, I don't, sure, whatever. And then he's like, no, it'll be great, 100-card singleton, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, sure, whatever, pal. And then I finally, you know, after washing out a Standard, you know, week after week, eventually, like, you know, we started playing a little bit on the side, and I just started loving it. Then I found you guys over at Commander Cast, you know, on a random Google one day, and then boom. After that, it was history, man. Then I started dropping, you know, $12 a pop on Dragon Shield, and then I had to start going to meetings.
So technically, if you're listening to this, you are all currently in an EDH group committee, and it's okay. We have to talk through our problems first. You know, the best way to deal with problems is first you have to acknowledge them and accept that you have them.
Yes, absolutely.
That's the first step to getting better, and you know, in this case, usually the first step into buying more sleeves and cards. Okay, so before we go too much further, there's something else that I have to ask you guys, because if I don't, William is going to snap at me, and I don't really feel like hearing him whine and cry about how come I didn't ask you these things. And it's kind of become a Commander Cast staple since he started. Currently, I'm going to ask both of you gentlemen, what is your favorite commander of the week? Bro, you want to take us in first on your favorite commander?
Oh gosh, of the week. I mean, I have one of all time, but if I'm going of the week, I'm going with a Planeswalker, and I'm going to say Sarkhan Vol.
Ooh, hint.
Yeah, there you go. There's a little teaser.
A little tip for you. A little, like, a cherry on the top of what you're going to be getting for today.
Yeah. Sorry, Safi.
And, Mark, is your favorite Planeswalker of the week still the same one from last week, or have you changed?
No, you know, I after our discussion last week when we were talking about Mono Red, I had to go back to one of my old standbys. I went with Godo Bandit Warlord. I broke that out and I was playing a little 1v1. A 1v1 is really popular in my meta, for some reason. You know, like, I guess a bunch of guys who just got tired of Legacy, you know, really started picking up this. So I started, you know, revamping that deck a little bit, throwing in some new, mono red tech. I'm just getting really hyped for the mono color precons coming out.
Do you guys have any stories that you want to say about your current commanders? Or do you want to save most of that until we actually get into the show?
Well, I mean,
as far as you are concerned, bro, I'm pretty sure. Like,
I mean, I could just say I really love Threatens, and the guy's got it, you know, printed on the card. So.
Okay, Mark, anything you want to talk about with your Godo? How's that been holding up for you?
You know, I've always loved Godo. I mean, it's hard not to love a tutor on a stick. I guess that, you know, it kind of dovetailed with the new cons coming out too. The cons of Tarkir, and I'm like, well,
yeah.
You know. I mean, I'm looking forward to the red tech that's going to be in that. I'm just hoping there's going to be a ton. Cause, you know, it's the perfect set for it. So, you know, I was playing a lot with that lately. You know, doing a little more Voltron, trying to do that. It's nice because, the guys who play 1v1 on my meta also do the 30 life. So, man, a mono red deck with 30 starting life is so much better than 40.
Yeah.
Oh man, I'm getting on that kick.
That's good.
Yep. Oh my god. Yep. It makes Burn playable. So good.
And that's what we'll talk about too with the Planeswalker sets.
Great. That's awesome. Yeah, I'm definitely getting on that 30 life train.
Yeah, you haven't been playing with 30 life, Mike?
Yeah, you know, I remember back when you guys were talking about it when Andy was still on the cast, and it seemed interesting, but I could never talk any of the guys in my meta into it. They're all like, no, that seems kind of crazy, I don't know, this 1v1 thing is nuts, even though, we would end up playing 1v1 most of the time anyway, because the way we would play is, after standard, two guys waiting for another match is usually what we would do. So, it's 1v1 anyway, but we were playing with the multiplayer rules, so...
Yeah, but the main thing for it is, if you're playing 1v1 and you're trying to play with 40 life, you're really going to drag that game out. Because that last 10 life makes a huge difference in just play time alone.
Huge. Yep. And, most of the guys I play with are like, hardcore control players. Never met a blue they didn't like. So, oh, my God.
Oh, fun.
Yep. So, and for them, I totally, now, of course, I get it. I'm like, of course they love 40 life. Who wouldn't want to be sitting, as a control deck, who wouldn't want to be sitting on 40 instead of 30?
Let's make it 60.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. Let's go back to the old rules. I mean, what was it, 100 life, or 200 divided by the number of players or something crazy like that?
Right.
Yeah. No thanks. Jesus, that must have been 5 hour games.
Games that would just take forever. I hope you have nothing planned. Hope you got a chance to kiss your loved ones goodbye before you left the house this morning, because it's going to be a while. It's going to be a while.
Yeah, I don't have time for that. The 30 life is sitting exactly where I want it.
Okay, so now that we've gotten to that part, let's go right ahead and let's jump in some to the news for the moment. Okay? Does that sound fine to everybody?
Yeah, sure.
Seems perfectly fine. Real quick, what we're going to do, we're going to go ahead and we're going to promote the community band poll that's currently going over on TGC?
MTG Salvation.
There you go. MTG Salvation. For some reason, I kept wanting to say TCG Player.
Oh.
They had nothing to do with this, as far as I know. But yeah, over on, MTG Salvation. There we go. Over on MTG Salvation, Donovan, also known as Dosu, one of the former commander administrators, is currently in the process of handling a community poll. Basically, you go over there, you join up, you log in, you can go right ahead and you can vote for the cards you feel should be on the EDH ban list. Now, keep in mind, this has nothing really to do with the actual ban list in and of itself. And there's no rules committee effect that's going to be taken care of, oh, we can get 3,000 votes on Nimrecord and get them off the ban list. No, that's not happening. But it's kind of a nice open poll, just to see how the community feels about the cards that we have on the ban list. There's some cards on it that are currently being debated, such as Emrakul. A heavy debate was happening last week between Emrakul being unbanned, but only as your commander, which is something that I personally have always been 100% behind, and for personal reasons. Not because I have a problem with Emrakul in and of itself, just because I think that it would be better as a commander, because if you can cast that bad boy from your command zone, you kind of deserve it.
Yep. If you can do 15 hard casts, sure. Take it.
Yeah, 15 hard casts and a colorless deck. Granted, there's going to be some mana rocks, and there's going to be and every card in your deck is non-basic. One ruination, and it's over.
You're going to get shanked. You're going to get smacked down before you get to that 15, so I think that's fair.
Yeah.
My group actually doesn't play with a ban list, so, and I love Donovan, but, I'm not into the ban list at all. I think none of them should be banned.
Well, me personally, I've always had, strong views and opinions about the cards that are and are not on the ban list. If anyone has any of those, wants to know how I feel about the ban list, you can go ahead and listen to any old episode of Off Cut Pass where we talked about it, and you will know exactly how I feel about the ban list and how my opinions about the cards truly don't matter. I still play with several of the cards that are on the ban list because I'm not a dick, and I can do that.
Yeah, and if you are a dick, in my play group at least, you just get stomped.
It just kind of happens.
No, I have to say before we go on, though, I think my favorite thing about the community ban list, aside from the fact that it's neat to see what everyone else wants, but if you look down here, I was just looking through this. Did you know Great Whale is on the ban list? Is on the community poll? Seriously? Someone wants... Okay, Palacron? Yeah, but Palacron's only pulling, 0.5% more than Great Whale. 0.2% of you... he got 19 votes, man.
Isn't it really Deadeye?
Isn't it really anything in blue besides Great Whale? Come on, guys.
Yeah, really.
I'm actually surprised that Island doesn't have more votes. Island just has all the votes. No, Island. Most broken card in Magic. Never coming off the list. Don't even think about it. Nope.
I know. Oh, okay. So just to put it in perspective. So Great Whale currently has more votes than Xur the Enchanter.
Oh my gosh.
I'm just saying. Not as a general, just as completely banned. But still, like, I don't know, community. This is, I'm losing faith.
Yeah. Like, there's some cards that are going to end up being on there just because, you know, someone wants to put something like, hey, like, I think that we should, vote against, a giant shark, just to name a card. And, you know, it's going to get 20 votes just because, you know, you're going to have those girls who's going to say, yeah, you know what, giant shark would be funny to vote for. But, you know, those aren't, like, you know, my view of it is, we're using this as basically a nice way to have, like, an overall view of what the community thinks of the current ban list.
Yeah.
And there's going to be some cards here. There's going to be jokes and stuff like that. Of course, Great Whale is probably going to end up being one of them. But in the same token, it's going to end up being one of those things that we can take the list of the cards that's on the current Rules Committee ban list and do a compare and contrast. And if, say, for instance, Upheaval doesn't get any votes in the community ban list, then maybe the community really doesn't mind it. Granted, most of the people who are in the community have probably been playing long after Upheaval was originally banned and has no idea why it's on the ban list. Trust me, it should stay there.
Yeah,
but, but, you know, it's just, you know, a nice little fun interaction.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Rob.
I was just going to say that there's definitely, you can make the case for some of the cards that are going to be on there. I mean, Deadeye Navigator, he's a beast. You can deal with him, but he is a beast. And Prophet of Crowfix, that's the one I've had a real hard time with. You know, you used to have to put out Bedalkan Ori and Seedborn Muse, and then you had a creature and an artifact that is fragile, and now you just got this one thing, and that thing will take over games. That's the card that's taken over more games than I've ever seen.
And the one thing for Deadeye Navigator, I used to be a strong advocator against having it actually, like, I wanted it on the ban list. I really hated that card. But, you know, after the episode where we had Sheldon on blast, and we talked with him about, like, the whole concept for Deadeye Navigator, he actually was able to convince me the other route. As much as I hate Deadeye Navigator, and I still do, don't get me wrong, I completely hate that fucking card. But still, Sheldon was able to get me to the point where it's like, you know what, it's busted, but now that I've really had a chance to sit down and talk with a Rules Committee member about it, I can understand why it's not there. Just out of, like, because it's one of those cards where when I first saw it, I could not wrap my head around how to get rid of it, and it just hits the table, and my brain's like, oh, the game's over, because it's here, and there's nothing I know I can do about it. And every time I tried to explain to the other people in the group who wasn't playing it how it's basically just ruined this match, it never occurred to me, like, oh yeah, that's right, this is a community table. We can all join together and kill that fucking thing. You can actually show us to.
That is exactly what I do. I'm a big politic player, and I'm really good at riling everybody against one person. So if you put in Deadeye Navigator, it's not hard. You know, it's just we're at a table with usually between 4 and 6 people, and if we're all gunning for the guy with Deadeye Navigator, it's not going to matter. I mean, unless he's blinking some fog creature and he's got unlimited mana, he's going down.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's not like it's not an upheaval, you know, like Calvin was saying before. It's not everybody's, it's just one thing at a time. And that one thing can be a huge pain in the ass, you know, like Deadeye Navigator in a Brago, the Eternal deck, or, you know, a Rune or anything else that's blinking stupid things. Like, it's oppressive, it's annoying. In 1v1, it's really annoying. But, you know, it's like anything else. You can deal with it. I mean, and the interesting thing, again, about the community list is that you'll see, like, the most of the things that get the most votes are the things that are already on the Rules Committee ban list.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah, because when you think about it from, like, an overall view, like, if you just, you know, take away the factors of the community and it's just overall, I'm pretty sure that the vast majority of the EDH community can all get together. We can all agree certain cards don't need to be here, period. We all get that. Some cards just, not worth talking about. Not even bringing this up. We don't want these here, period. And, you know, it's just general. But the community is so widespread, in my opinion, that a lot of us don't see it. It's kind of like, a globe effect, you know? Someone in one part of the globe doesn't understand why something's going on another side. But if you just, like, take a far enough back look at it, you can see everyone's kind of on the same spot.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's important to know the rules and follow them when you go to like an LGS. But in your play group, just do whatever you want. I mean, that's what we do. That's why we were using Planeswalkers as commanders.
That's right. That's why we use Primeval. Like,
yeah, that's awesome.
Oh yeah, I've got a, you know, one of those foiled GP promo Primeval Titans and I'm going to run it.
Yeah. main thing is, like, I have currently, I think I have only one prime time left. I think I had, like, three. I don't know what I have done with the other two. I probably traded them or sold them off or whatever. But I know I have one left, and that one is in my group hug deck.
Oh, yeah,
and,
sure.
And as far as I'm concerned, that's the perfect place for a Primeval Titan, because I can go ahead and cast him, and I have no intention of doing anything with him that my opponents weren't going to do with him anyway. I'm going to cast him, and I'm going to generate mana to use that mana to give them stuff. If anyone has the slightest complaint about that, I'm pretty sure they have the rest of the tape to deal with.
I love it. That's fantastic.
Yep.
But yeah, so if you get a chance to, go right ahead. There'll be a link over in the show notes. You know, go right ahead, down in the show notes. You know, the place where you got this from, the show notes team. And I don't know if any of you ever read them, but you can go down there, and it's got words, and there's links, and pretty much everything we talk about is down there. You can click on it, and it'll take you right over there. And if you know, you can always just go right over to the site anyway and go there. And get involved in the poll. It's up for, I believe, another 2 months or so, last time I checked. Well, when William mentioned it last week, it was like 2 months. It was like, end of October or something. So you've still got plenty of time to go over there. And, you know, maybe we can, you know, convince the EDH community to ban that giant whale.
Yeah, there's still time left. Hurry, guys.
Like, time's wasting. Why aren't you? But in other news, today, actually, there's been a couple spoilers from Wizards. I'm pretty sure there's another con going on. And trust me, ladies and gentlemen, we're not going to stay on this topic nearly as long as we did the other week. This is not going to be a 4-hour show. I've got to eat. So, one of the main things I want to bring up is we've got three new cards that have been spoiled. Have you gentlemen seen these?
No.
Oh, no. Wait, are you talking about From the Vaults, or do we get new, like, cons or something else spoiled?
We have one card spoiled from the new Commander set.
Ooh.
A legend.
I didn't see that.
No, I didn't either.
Yeah, well, I'm about to let you gentlemen in on something. And we have, and I believe it's two cards from cons that we have. A morph creature and one of the keywords. Or mechanics. I'm not really sure if that's what they call it now. Whatever it is. But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So, you gentlemen want to start off with the cherry on top of the new card from the Commander, or do you want to talk about cons and kind of, like, tease the audience a little? I'm pretty sure they already know about it.
Let's talk about cons first.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Okay. So, with cons, we have currently gotten two new cards. Now, we have a blue card and we have a red card. The blue card has warp. So we've gotten a chance to see, you know, what Wizards plans on doing with Morph. And, you know, for any of you out there who don't know what Morph is, it's an old mechanic. It's returning in cons a card here. And that basically is, you can play a card face down and it's treated as a 2/2 creature that you can pay 3 colors mana for. And now remember, this creature has no creature type. They're not elves. They're not goblins. This is not like, Mutavault. It's just a 2/2 creature, period. That's it. And if you had to think about a name for it, the name is Creature. Because there's no other defining text on what it is when it's face down. But on the other side of it, when you flip it face up, it's still a magic card, and it has an ability. And usually when the morph creatures flip up, they turn into something else. They usually give you some type of an effect when they turn over, and they cost some type of and they have some type of cost to flip them. What we currently have is known as the Thousand Winds. It's 4 colors, it's double blue, and it's an elemental. It's a 5/6 flyer. And it has a morph activation cost of 5 colorless and double blue. So, for any of you out there who don't know how this works, you can either A, just cast it just as a regular card, and it'd be a 5/6 flyer for 6, which is perfectly fine if you're playing, like, limited, or you just need a beat stick. Or, if you happen to have it in your hand early, you can pay 3 colorless and slap it down on the field and have a 2/2 creature to block with, attack your opponents with, and whatever. And then when you finally get to the 7 mana, you could pay 5 colors, double blue, and it'll flip over into a 5/6 flyer. And you can do this anytime. So if you attack with it as a 2/2, you can morph it, and if your opponent's not expecting it, boom, instant 5 damage to the face when they thought they were taking 2. Or, you know, they thought they were going to be able to kill your 2/2 with their bear, and boom, it turns into a 5/6, kills their bear, a little bit of value, things like that. And there's a couple other, like, rules, issues that come up with morph, but I'm not going to get into those. I'm not the judge here.
They'll actually unsummon that bear if you do it in that regard.
Yeah, unsummon that bear. Because then you can't morph.
I like this card.
And this elemental is morph ability. Once you flip him over, he has another piece of text on him that says, when Thousand Winds is turned face up, return all other tapped creatures to their owner's hands.
Nice.
So hey. That's good. I mean, blue wants to leave its man open all the time. Save up for counter spells, and if you get an Alpha Strike coming your way, unsummon their whole team. That's great.
Exactly. And the best part about it is, for like a blue player, is like, it says whenever this card flips up, you know, you return all tapped creatures. So, say for instance, you're in the process of being Alpha-strucking. You're down low on the life, you're the blue play, you have this card face down, you've got 7 mana. Your opponent just says, you know what, the hell with it, swing with the tank. You can pay 7 mana and return every creature they attack with to their hand before damage is dealt. And at the end of it, you still have a 5-6.
Flyer.
With flying. Yeah, there we go. 5-6 flyer, ready to go back in there.
That's all. You know, that 5-6 is actually really strong for something with an effect like that. I'm surprised. I know in the past, like, when blue creatures seem to get really good effects, they get really nerfed in the power and toughness. But this guy is still really respectable. 5-6 flyer for 6, or in this case, I guess if you want to morph him, 5-6 flyer for 7, I'd still pay that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would too.
And the thing is, like, in our particular format of choice, it gets rid of all other tap creatures. So even if, like, say, for instance, I attacked Ro, and then later on Ro took his creatures, and instead of attacking me, chose to attack Mark, William could go right ahead and pay 7, and he could bounce every creature myself and Ro attacked with. Or he could wait until Mark attacked and get rid of all of our guys that attacked. And he'd be left with a 5-6, and the only thing we would have left behind is anything we chose not to attack with, or anything that did attack that had vigilance, just to clarify.
Yeah, no, that's solid.
Yeah,
that's
awesome. Seems good. I like it.
Yeah, I could easily see it as being like a card that's going to end up showing up a lot at the tables if you're playing EDH. This is going to end up being something that I'm going to end up hating a lot because I attack a lot. But, you know, aside from that, you know, aside from, you know, personal hatred of it, anything else you guys want to say about this before we move on to the next card?
Nope.
Nope, just that I like it. It's interesting. I like big spells. That's fun.
Yeah.
If I'm going to do blue, I want...
You want all the cards.
The typical counterspell stuff and just go with some big beaters. That's great.
Let's go ahead and jump into the next card, shall we?
Sure.
Which is Murdu Heart Piercer. And that's a human archer. It's 3 colors and a red. It's a uncommon. It's a 2/3. And it has raid. And that's basically what I'm assuming is the mechanic for Murdu, that's what the red, black, white group is. I believe it is. I'm still getting used to their names. Whichever group it is, it's in love with the dragons and the wings. I'm pretty sure that's the black, red, and white. William would know this.
Yeah, Borzov.
Borzov. but what raid basically is, I personally compared it to Bloodthirst, in a way. And what his effect basically reads is, when Murdu Heart Piercer enters the battlefield. If you attack with a creature this turn, Murdu Heart Piercer deals 2 damage to target creature or player. So, it's obviously a card that you would want to cast during your second main phase, or if you happen to be the kind of guy that happens to have a lot of effects that give you extra attacks, like Aggravated Assault, things like that, you know, you get a chance to have multiple chances to drop this thing down. Now, it's perfectly fine. It's a 2/3 for 4 mana to play during your first main phase and just need a guy. But you kind of want to have another guy down first that you attack with. So this way you can get that extra bit of shock out of it.
Yeah, he does 1 shock. You can't stack it or anything. But, right. Yeah, it seems okay. I like the mechanic. This feels like sort of a limited card. Small effect, but I like it.
Right. I mean, the thing is, like, you know, it's basically here. We're basically going over so we can talk about the concept for this.
Right. And the mechanic seems fun. Right. I can't wait to see some of the splashier.
So the bigger, more red, maybe double color, triple color, or whatever other cards that show up that have this effect on it,
they're
going to be fine. Because it's going to be stuff that's going to be like, oh yeah, I swung with my guy and I'm going to play this and now burn your Nate the Fields or destroy this or gain control of that. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if something had like raid when this card enters the battlefield after a creature attacks, you get an extra combat phase after this and it has to have like pace or something. Like, you know, just like what was it, I can't remember. What's the card? Untap all creatures.
Relentless Assault?
I just said it. Relentless Assault. Basically, I could see, like, a creature with, like, a Relentless Assault and Rage stapled onto it. It's like, you have to attack with something. You cast it. Everything comes untapped. You get a chance to do another Relentless. You get another chance to attack again. Which then means, like, you know, so it just gives you, like, you know, a chance to get more aggressive. Just saying. Just speculation.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see Godo get reprinted in this set. I mean, speaking of multiple attacks.
Right.
And I guess it would fit. But I hate to say, I think you guys are overlooking the most important part of this card is that archers are getting more love.
Archer Tribe.
We are one step closer to Archer Tribal.
So. Oh my gosh.
Well, you know, he is there, and like, hopefully he's not the only one.
He can't be. Come on. In a sense, it's supposed to be like Mongolian. Loosely based on it. There's gonna be so many archers.
Yeah.
I'm hoping for Advisor Tribe, so.
Yes. So like, red black is the archer side, and then like, the blue white is the advisor side. There we go. Yeah.
So what you're saying is, we can probably like, build horse.deck out of this set. Like, there's just artwork. Like, Judd, get on it. When this set comes out, it's your job. All artwork, anybody riding a horse, horsemanship.
He has that deck. This is just gonna give him more cards for that
just
deck.
Just more into it. It has to have artwork with a horse in it.
Yep, the Rough Riders is what he calls it, I think.
Yeah, well, he's definitely not gonna get any love for his, tri-cornered hat deck, so.
Yeah. Alright, so now that we've gone over the spoilers from, cons, let's go ahead and talk about the new legendary creature that came out, shall we, gentlemen?
Yeah, that sounds
great. Absolutely. This guy looks cool.
Yeah, so we have a new legendary creature that's been spoiled. It's one of the legendary creatures from the Commander 2015 that'll be coming out, I believe it's November this year. And it's a mono blue legend. So everybody knows, you know, Teferi is the guy who's on the front of that box. And we know that each one of those boxes comes with one planeswalker that can be used as your commander, and at the very least, one legendary creature, because wizards are like, you know, in case you're not in the mood, or you play the planeswalkers and you don't like it, you don't want to force you into playing planeswalkers to commander, even though you have the option to do it. Here's a couple legendary creatures, or at least one other legendary creature in there. And this gentleman is the blue one. And his name is Stitcher Garolf.
Commander Cast Facebook page says that this was your guess.
Yeah. Yeah, this was my guess, because Stitcher Garolf, when we were talking about it a while ago, I remember talking about this with Eric while we were doing the six-pack set review, episode 2, in case you don't know, me and Eric get together. We drink, we review sets, we hit a random card, and whatever happens to be the symbol or set that card had, we go back and we review that set for, you know, playable cards for Commander and cards that suck. While drinking lots and lots of beer or alcoholic beverages. And in between, like, you know, finding cards, he asked me what I thought would probably be the legendary creatures and the planeswalkers with the boxes. And I told him for the blue one, I basically said I believe it would be Giraffe. Mainly because we had Geisa, however her name is pronounced, as the zombie necromancer for the black one. And my argument was that I would like to see Garolf in the blue one, because if I decide to pick the blue deck and just the black deck, I could play a 1v1 where it's kind of like a sibling rivalry. I have a blue deck with Garolf at the head versus Sneasa, because the two of them, if you're into flavor at all, they kind of have like this interesting sibling rivalry when it comes to what it means to bring life back. Geisa has more of the necromancer feel, and Garolf is more of the Frankenstein's monster, if you will.
Well, yeah, he looks like Dr. Frankenstein, right. Yeah. I think that art is sick.
Yeah, it's an amazing looking art. And he even has his own, it looks like he has his own, like, Igor in the corner, too. Like, if you look
at it. Yeah, he does.
It's like he's sitting there, he's standing over what looks like a Frankenstein creature on the table.
He's holding up his tools.
Oh, that's one of those little goofy homunculuses.
Isn't that like Stitcher's
Apprentice or something like that? Isn't that the card I'm thinking of?
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Oh, that's an awesome callback.
Yeah.
Nice. And I love Innistrad art, and it's definitely reminiscent of cards from Innistrad. That's great.
Yeah, oh, man. Oh, you know, I hate to keep going off about the art, but, man, he's just poking that zombie right in the eye, man. He's just, like, finger, like, right in eye socket. Just, like, messing around. Oh, man.
Well, you know, when he's piecing everything together, you kind of got to force those bad boys in, and you can't just, like, leave them just laying around. You can't just, like, let gravity sink them in. You know, sometimes you need a little push.
He's got the eye and the forceps. He's definitely prepping the socket.
Yeah, he's totally getting ready to go in there. So, let's go ahead and, like, describe this thing to the listeners in case they don't know what it is.
Yep.
Stitcher's Garolf is 3 colors, double blue, legendary creature. It's a human wizard. He's a 3/4, which is actually kind of big for a human. Like, you know, if you look at him, he doesn't really look like he's all that beefy.
And for a blue card, nonetheless, they are really pushing blue in different directions than it's ever been.
He's a little big for a scientist. But then again, I guess, like, helping haul those, like, carcasses all the way around, it's kind of understandable. And he has an ability which is two colors and a blue and tap it. Each player puts the top three cards of his or her library into his or her graveyard. Exile up to two creature cards put into the graveyard this way. Put an XX blue zombie creature token onto the battlefield where X is the total power of the cards exiled this way.
God, that feels black too. That's weird.
It does. It feels like this should be a, like when I looked at it, I thought it was going to be blue black, and then I had to remember that it was
right. It feels like blue black card.
Yeah,
but
it's cool though.
There's a couple of things I want to quickly say about this. One, it really does harken back to the blue zombies from Innistrad.
Yes.
Because when Innistrad came around, the black zombies, when Innistrad came around, we had monsters that were in two colors, like werewolves were red green, zombies were blue black. Guys were white, blue, and whatever. You know, basically they had that stuff. And each color, while it had monsters, each individual color had monsters that had a certain feel to them. The black zombies were mostly just zombies that came in tap because you had this feeling of them resurrecting from the ground up, and they were kind of slow, slambering, you know, like Dawn of the Dead. They had extra powers and stuff like that, but they always seemed to show up sideways. Because that was kind of the wizard's way of showing them as the shambling horde. And all of the blue zombies, they had a little bit of a mill effect. You could get them, and they were big, beefy creatures, but they would, like, throw, like, a certain number of cards from the top of your deck into your life, into your graveyard. So,
yeah, they did that exile thing, too, now that I remember.
So the fact that he does the exile thing, and he takes it from the tops of everybody's great library, it's kind of like he goes around the city, he takes out everybody's creatures, or takes out the top three things, like going through their garbage, you know. And then, like, if he happens to find a creature on his or on rounds about that he thinks are interesting, he can drag them back there. No wonder he's 3-4, he'd have to be hauling a lot of heavy carcasses back. And, you know, then when he gets back to his lab, he, you know, pulls out his needle and his thread, and he takes the two best subjects and kind of puts them together into one nice little perfect package.
Yeah, no, I think this is a really good ability. And the thing I like about this most is this doesn't have to be a blue zombie deck. You know, this can just be a blue deck. But, you know, like you guys were talking before, pushing blue into more of like an aggressive build. I mean, since when does blue get to spit out the big fatties, you know?
Yeah.
And now it's going to. It's kind of, I mean, it's, you know,
I like
especially, it. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be nice for people who don't want to just sit back on their mana. You know, it's going to be really good for people who just want to play that aggressive game, and really good for new players, too. You know, it's not like this is kind of a crazy, complicated mechanic. It's just, yeah, dump some stuff in your yard. Oh, okay, I'll take a Chroma. I'll take, you know, whatever, and just exile it, and then boom, you know, it's awesome. It's even its own little kind of graveyard hate.
Oh, my gosh, it is.
Because it's all one effect. It all happens at the same time. Now, I have to wait until I get a chance to talk to a judge to see if you can remove an Eldrazi for this. Because since it's the same effect, before the Eldrazi trigger would come in that would allow it to shuffle back in, you'd still have to finish this effect, I believe.
Yeah, that period is...
But that seems like one of those corner case things where I'm going to have to, you know, call up somebody, you know, place out a... Alright, here's a question, people. How do you help? Before I go ahead and make any official announcements about it. And, you know, that's it for our spoilers. Oh, and one more thing. The creature on the table, I'm pretty sure that's Crystal Brand.
Sweet.
Oh, okay.
If you, like, look at... If you see that thing around his neck...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Huh.
Oh, all right.
Sweet.
I'm pretty sure he's stitching together Grizzlebrand. Not Grizzlebrand, Grimgrin.
Oh, you mean Grimgrin. Yep. It is Grimgrin.
There we go.
You're right. That is him.
Grizzlebrand's a demon. Ignore me! But, yeah, he's totally stitching together Grimgrin.
Oh, man, that's sweet.
But as far as the show, as far as the news is concerned, that's roughly it. We're basically done with news. And this news segment is probably going on way longer than I've expected. But that's okay. We still got plenty of time. So, gentlemen, are we ready to jump into what we're going to be doing today?
Absolutely.
Okay. Alright, so listeners, if you want to stick around for the rest of the show, which I'm kind of hoping you are, and more likely are, because you wouldn't be this far into the show already, we're going to be discussing Planeswalkers as your commander. Rose recently mentioned that, you know, that's something him and his play group have been discussing, so we're gonna spend a little bit of time here talking about this concept, if you will. So, we're about to head straight to our community segment. We're gonna discuss this. Stick around. Okay, that's the best I'm going to do as far as the leader is concerned. Are you guys ready?
Yeah, anytime.
Okay, everybody, it's now time for us to go into our community segment. And for our community segment today, we're going to be discussing, you know, basically talking to Ro here. Ro has been brought onto the show because of, from my understanding, his recent expertise, is a nice way of saying it, in playing Planeswalkers as your commander. From my understanding, Ro says that from the moment the announcement of Planeswalkers being used as commanders for the 2015 pre-cons was announced, him and his playgroup basically say, well, you know what, if we're going to be dealing with this, let's hard hammer this bad boy out. Let's see what this format is going to be like. And he's convinced his group to just kind of just shove Planeswalkers into the command zone as hard as possible. Hello?
Is he there?
Hello?
Calvin?
Hello?
You there?
Hello?
Sorry, I phased out there for a second. You guys can still hear me?
It just sounded just like your mic cut out or something.
It might have been. Every so often, like, my laptop does that to me. It's one of the reasons I kind of prefer when William records, because if I just get cut off, I can just cut the segment when I was talking completely out. But still, it's okay. We can go ahead.
Right. Don't worry.
So Rose group, basically, after finding out about the commander thing, they pretty much decided we're going to hammer home this concept. You know, they pretty much grabbed up all the planeswalkers they've had and shoved them all into the command zone as hard as possible and build decks around them, get a chance to run them out there, group games, and I'm talking, they have been putting in some work for it. So, Ro, what is your overall view of it so far?
Okay, so like you said, I started when they spoiled Teferi, and at first I was like, this is weird, and then I was like, well, if this is going to happen, let's just do it. And so I built all the first ones. I built one for each color, and monocolor. Liliana of the Dark Realms, Ajani Collar of the Pride, Nissa Ravain, Chandra Blaze, and Tezzeret the Seeker. And we ran them together the following weekend, and it was awesome. I loved it.
Really?
We have not really wanted to do anything else since. That's why we've been trying it so hard. And I have played them in games with people using Legends as well. So mm-hmm. I have that experience as well. And it doesn't change much. You still have the 99 cards that make up the bulk of what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But what I like about it is the tension that it creates in protecting your planeswalker and, you know, being concerned about somebody's planeswalker leveling up. And, you know, it's been really fun.
So, you know what the burning question that's going to be on everybody's mind about this is?
What is it?
Why haven't you used Tybalt as the red one?
I actually,
because that's going to be the main thing everybody here on CommanderCast wants to know. Why not Tybalt? Everybody knows he's so awesome.
I tweeted that I was going to use Tybalt, but then I didn't. Same reason I didn't use, you know, I thought Gideon Jura as a Voltron. I was like, I could do this. And then I started and I was like, no, I can't do this. This is going to be ridiculous. No, Chandra Blaze is my favorite one of those five.
Really? Wow.
Oh, God, yes. Well, okay. I was going to talk about Burn. Burn becomes amazing. I mean, when you can just take loyalty counters off of planeswalkers. And her first ability is, you know, pitch a red card and do 4 damage to target creature or player. And since you can, you know, choose a planeswalker as a replacement effect player, she just burns out planeswalkers.
Huh.
And she's a red general now that has draw a card on it. Her middle ability, that mini wheel where you discard everybody discards their hand, which is wonderful hand disruption, and then draws 3, that thing is amazing. It's a machine.
And you have to remember, with her being your commander, the ability to discard red spells to her ability, seeing as how she's your commander and not in your deck, you always have access to her. And as long as you're getting a hand of anything, you always have something to discard. You know, outside of, like, just lands.
Yep, they work together. I mean, that's the whole idea of the Planeswalkers, and that's why I like it so much. Oftentimes, you'll use that middle ability, because I found that ultimating, that is not easy. I think that's what people were concerned about. Oh, but yeah, you know, Jace is gonna exile your library, and you know, this, that, and the other, and then it, you know, it doesn't happen. The only ones that really it's easy is Garruk, obviously, but that's just an overrun. We have, you know,
yeah, that's because, you know, he shows up, he almost instantly overruns, or he'll end up having like a doubling season out that just basically, oh, look, I showed up and ruinate the game.
Yep. And then, you know, obviously Sarkon the Mad, which my brother built a Sarkon the Mad, and that is fun.
Actually, that sounds extremely interesting. Sarkon the Mad. Because he's the planeswalker that has no pluses, right?
All negatives.
It's all downhill for him, baby.
Yeah, but he just keeps powering him out. Card advantage when he uses that zero ability, really just rolling the dice, hoping he gets a land so he can just keep moving. He'll make his own dragons. He'll give people dragons, and then he'll just throw his dragons at your face. And his deck has been wildly successful.
See, for him, the main thing I would think would probably be the most interesting is going to the command zone would probably be the best thing for him.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
it's like dying and going to the command zone is his plus one.
Yep.
Yeah, you're just resetting that all the time, man. That's, you know, that really is pretty awesome. And then, like you said before, you know, it doesn't sound like anyone gets the ultimate. So his, you know, lack of an ultimate is not a downside.
Yeah, you can ultimate. That's what I like is that it's just as rare as it always has been in Commander to see an ultimate. Cause planeswalkers come down, they get sniped. But now planeswalkers coming down, you know, on everybody's side of the board, there's only so much you can do.
There's only so much sniping you can earn.
But you're gonna need to use those middle abilities. They're really helpful. I've since changed a Johnny to Elspeth. I found that he didn't like not having creatures cause then you got nothing to do with this thing. It made more sense to do Elspeth. But that first game that we played was probably the best one I've ever played. It's like one of the best games of Commander I've ever played, period. So Chandra had to sit that one out. We only had four people because my friend Dave had to go out with his girlfriend. So we had, had to. We had Liliana of the Dark Realms, Tezzeret the Seeker, Nissa Ravane, and a Johnny Caller of the Pride, and we chose them at random. So I just brought them for everybody to use. This was before they were building their own. And we chose them at random. And it was the biggest, the swingiest game I've ever seen. In the beginning, the Johnny guy did, I think, 20 points of damage to me. I was using Nissa. Just railed me with the flying double strike thing. And it had a pretty big equipment package in it. So he hit me. And then Liliana's about to get out the 2020 Dark Depths token. Whatever, the Merit Lodge. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's working that down. And then Tezzeret came out and started proliferating. And started proliferating on the Dark Depths and on his, on his Planeswalker, too. So it got crazy. We had Darksteel Forges out. And actually, Liliana, my brother playing Liliana, he won the game. And it was at a point where we thought Tezzeret had just shut us all out. It was the craziest swing I'd ever seen. Like, the Tezzeret player had the old Darksteel Forge Platinum Angel thing out, and I overran him with elves till he was at, negative 50 life, and then the Liliana player pulled out, I think it was Dictate of Erebos, Sack Outlet, and It the Betrays, so it was over. Yeah, pretty nice.
Mark, do you have any questions you have to ask Ro real quick?
Sure, yeah. You know, it's interesting that you guys went with a Johnny first over Elspeth. I would always think that Elspeth was, I guess, you know, because you swapped back, I guess you guys found out too. I mean, is a Johnny, did he just not make the cut? Was he just not, I mean, you said there was not enough creatures. Did he just not do anything that game?
No, he actually did. And that's the funny thing. It actually came down to a Johnny and Liliana. And a Johnny put out a Martyr of Sands, suited it up, and used a Johnny's middle ability to give it flying a double strike for lethal damage to Liliana. And he goes, Hero's Downfall. Good game. It was over. He just, he killed the creature. And so that was the end of the game. But he actually was relevant. The only reason I didn't put Elspeth in, because I actually got rid of my Elspeth a long time ago. I had to get another one. So I didn't have one at the time. But what I want to do is I want to keep it really creature light and go for the victory with the soldier token.
Huh.
I mean, I've got swords and Batterskull and strong equipment in there. Huge equipment and all pretty much every equipment fetcher you could ask for.
Well, yeah, you put all in. Cover for it.
Yeah, exactly. So I just jammed it full of that stuff. And I really want to make the little token the focus of that. I think that's funny. I have another deck I built in the Johnny Vengeance, and that's where most of my really strong beaters are.
So you know, now you're talking my deck.
Yeah, the Baneslayer, the Hero of Bladehold, just attack Aurelia. That was the original commander of the deck.
That's right, get in there.
Yeah, and that's that thing is just violent. That's where my Godo is. Aggression.
Nice.
And that deck has all the problems that deck normally does.
Yeah.
It's not any better having a Johnny in
there. For a red white deck, it doesn't really matter who's at the helm.
Yeah, exactly. I know, you're always going to have the same problems.
Yep.
Same image.
Ro, you know, it's really interesting you said you swapped out Aurelia for it. I was going to ask you, when you were building these decks, did you build them from scratch, or did you just swap out the old commander and put in the Planeswalker?
Most of these decks, all actually, and I've built 10 so far myself, and some have changed a little bit, but most of the ones that I built, aside from the Ajani Vengeance, I built from the ground up. The Ajani Vengeance one, it wasn't going to change too much. I mean, I barely ever cast Aurelia in the Aurelia deck. It was really just for the... I would only really cast her if it was for the win. Because it wanted to go so fast that normally I'd cast Aurelia and then somebody'd blow her out. So I'd really just wait until it was the right time. So it actually didn't need to change much. Because Ajani Vengeance doesn't have anything specific about him except for that he would be perfect for head-to-head. I mean, he blows out people's lands.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, he's doing everything you want to do in a red-white anyway. So, and then, you know, I was just curious, too, about Liliana. You said Liliana Vess? Or no, Liliana of the Dark Realms?
Yeah, that's the one I used.
Oh, cool. Now, why did you pick, is it just for the ramp that you picked Liliana of the Dark Realms? Or was there something about her that you wanted to focus on, like, you know, the minus X ability?
Oh, man. Actually, it's all of it. The ramp, the minus X ability, and the plus X ability. That's actually really relevant, too. I mean, I put in pretty nasty stuff. Like, I put Skitherix in there because of that plus X ability.
Oh yeah. Well, you got to.
It's jerky, but, oh, man, what a blowout that would be.
I mean, I'm sure that's got to have, like, all the tech that everybody hates about mono black decks. You know, are you storming into Tendrils of Agony all the time with that
No, I didn't do that. And I actually, I got rid of my coffers a while ago. I found that, Cabal Coffers, I put in something a little more fair. I put in Magus of the Coffers. Because I find that when you have Cabal Coffers in a deck, a mono black deck, that deck becomes Cabal Coffers.deck. It's just about that. And I wanted her ability to be the focus of it. So I didn't bother to get another one. I don't need it. It'll always just be the first thing you tutor for. So I want to change things in that regard. And I didn't use Liliana Vess because I didn't want Vampiric Tutor to be my general.
Yeah.
You're not going to use that discard. You're just going to use her as a double tutor and just keep doing that. And I'm not against tutors, but in fact, I like them and I run like a lot of the ones, especially the ones that go to the battlefield, but I prefer redundancy in my decks.
But I would have to say that on Liliana Vess's defense, the fact of having her a commander that always has the option to make a player discard a card seems like it'd be one of those things where you would play it, you would make the player discard a card. Eventually, you know, once everybody's hand's gotten either extremely low or the guy with the Reliquary Tower has gotten a massive hand, you know who to target with it from now on.
Yep.
And he knows, basically, there's almost nothing he can do about it for the rest of the game. Because even if he kills her, she's just going to be in the command zone waiting for another two mana to show up, which she'll probably have. Then she'll come back down and start making a discard again and again and again.
Right, and I have a friend who's going to... He actually has a Rats discard deck, and he's just going to throw Liliana Vess at the head. And then all he has to do is tutor up the original, you know, Maro Nar, the original general, and then he's got pretty much just his deck, but with ultimate access to Liliana, so it's probably better. I would say that I didn't want to build these first five that I made any kinds of controlly or grindy. I wanted them all to be fun, and really just went mostly aggressive with all of them, except for maybe the Tezzeret the Seeker, but since then I've actually taken him apart, rebuilt Tezzeret Agent of Volos, and then made the Mono Blue a control deck with Jace, Architect of Thought.
You know, I might actually have to start taking a tally of how many aggressive players come on the show.
Yeah, we do kind of attract it, I guess.
I don't understand why. It just seems like, you know, no plays control. But on average, I rarely see, like, oh, yeah, like, I like to beat people's face. I love to smash people. I got a commander that I slap everything on. I just crush chins in it.
Well, I built the decks like that, but I'm probably more of a combo player than anything. And I put combo into all my... what I like to do is make an aggressive deck with combos in it.
Gotcha. So that way you have the option to beat your opponent down if needed, but if you happen to come across the pieces you need.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, you know, you let the game go long enough for me to assemble this. It's kind of your fault that,
I said Sarkon was my favorite, commander right now, but really my favorite commander of all time is, Safi Eric's daughter. And it's
there you go.
Yeah, it's an impossible to mess with, combo deck. It just loops over and over and over, you know, the Revel Arc and Sun Titan and all that stuff.
Everything
so that's what I do most of the time. But when they get too powerful, I have to take them apart because it's not fun to do the same thing over and over.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting, you know, when you said you had to take apart the Tezzeret deck, Tezzeret the Seeker and I think Soren Markov might be the top two reasons that I would be worried about playing Planeswalkers and Generals.
Well, here's what I have to say about Tezzeret. Is Tezzeret worse than Arkham Daxon? I think not.
Yeah, that's true. You know that, and the other flip side of the coin, I didn't know, we'll probably get into this later, but the flip side is that I was wondering, like, how many of these Planeswalkers are actually better than some of the other generals you would use? Like, you know, Venser the Sojourner might seem pretty awesome, but I wouldn't run him before I ran Virago, the Eternal, you know, if I was running a Blink deck, or like Rune.
Rune, right.
You know, just because it's, you know, the creatures are so much more abusable in the decks that want to abuse them, like an Arkham Daxon deck, or, you know, a Rune deck, or something like that. You know, those things are just really oppressive, whereas the Planeswalkers, you know, unless you got the Chainveil out, I guess, or the new Teferi, like, you're only using that thing once a turn. So.
New Teferi is only if the ultimates, and like I said, those aren't happening. I think I would much rather come across that Teferi Planeswalker than the original Teferi.
Right.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Because when I see the original Teferi, I know I'm about to get locked out of this game. Like, quick.
Yeah. And the main thing for Vincent Sojourner as a Planeswalker commander, I could easily see it being more of a, like, if you wanted to build a deck that was based around Blink, but you didn't want to use one of the other creatures that everyone abuses so much, it seems like it'd be a nice way to build a casual deck involving Blink, where you're kind of putting a restriction on yourself. I can only do this once a turn, sir. I can only target one card. I can't do this repeatedly. I can't abuse this. The best I'm getting is maybe getting the Chain Veil out. And maybe if I'm, like, taking infinite turns, then I can do it. But if I was taking infinite turns, you were kind of screwed anyway.
Yeah, of course. So that's I wanted to talk about the archetypes that take kind of a hit and the ones that get kind of a boost. So, like, obviously Voltron is just nerfed. It's done. You know, you can Voltron up a guy. That's okay. And it'll still work. But if you want to do the general damage thing, that's out the window. You know, the old Ural thing. So the other one is combo. Because a lot of times, like I was talking about with my Safi deck, the general's part of your combo. It's not really feasible to combo with a Planeswalker, which I think is fair. I think it makes it fairer, actually. Yeah. Because you're not gonna be, you know, doing Nivizzet, Ophidian Eye. You can't do that with a Planeswalker.
Right.
They get once per turn, sometimes twice, if you have all the cheaty things, and the Chain Veil, and some of the other ways to do it, Teferi, and that's probably it, isn't it?
As I'm thinking about it, Planeswalkers as a commander would probably be a lot harder to use in a combo situation.
No, because you can't combo with the Planeswalker. Not really. Right. I mean, unless you count Doubling Season and a Planeswalker as a combo, or Inexorable Tide. I mean, these are the secret tech or whatever, quote unquote. Obviously, that's not really a secret. Everybody knows about that.
Yeah, but what I'm going with is, like, when it comes to, like, Planeswalkers, my main thing that I'm going to put here is that when you have a Planeswalker and they calm down, very few of the Planeswalkers have a way to put themselves at zero and back into your command zone. I mean, what was it, Tezzeret the Seeker is like the only one where you can just go like -4 for his entire loyalty and he'll go back and come down.
Yep.
And I think he's probably one of the only ones. It might be him and maybe one of the Sandras, I think. I don't remember them all off the top of my head, but out of like a damn near 50 Planeswalkers we have, there's really only like maybe 2-3 they can actually go to zero on their own.
And keep coming back. So Tezzeret's definitely probably one of the strongest. Right. Soren is just...
Yeah, so it's like...
You want to make Magister Sphinx your general, that's awful.
If you're trying to combo, it's not like you're going to be like, oh, I'm going to drop Jace and I'm going to minus him and now I'm going to get this effect of drawing a card and that's kind of it. Unless I can find a way to, like, kill him myself, I can't continue.
Oh, man. Yeah. Jace is one of the funniest ones to talk about, because I feel like that's the one people are so scared of. And he's nothing. In Commander, yeah, he's pretty good, but he's just going to come down and unsummon or brainstorm and then die. He's nothing to be scared of. I think Tezzeret is, and I think Sorin is. I think you were right, Mark. Those are the two that are frightening.
Yeah, the only other one I think it would be frightening to me would be Karn. You know, because, like, I run a Karn deck. You know, Karn, the legendary creature deck. Yeah, the Silver Golem. And I love that deck, just because I love to do stupid shit with artifacts.
Sure.
But, you know, honestly, like, that's the only time I would say that, like, objectively, Karn the Planeswalker is better than Karn the General. You know, I mean, exiling stuff out of hands or exiling stuff, you know, straight up exiling permanents. I mean, that's just got to be ridiculous. But, you know, I think that there's a weird Venn diagram of players out there now that we talked about it who, you know, there's a subset of guys now whose brains must be like right on the verge of a stroke, because, you know, the same guys I feel like who complain about the infinite combos in Magic, and, oh, that's so busted, and gripe and moan about stuff, now, like, would also gripe and moan about having Planeswalkers as generals, but, like, you can't do the crazy combos with the Planeswalker, so I feel like somebody's brain is about to explode out there.
Yep. And that's why it always has to come down to your own social contract, the social contract in general, and especially your own one in your play group. That's why we decided to do this, even though there was no rules saying we could, but...
Yeah, I might as well give it a try.
Say you know, we can't.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, hey, it's a community format. We're allowed to change the rules. The community rules committee always recommends, hey, if, you know, as long as your play group is cool with what you're doing, do it. Have fun, because this is the format where you're supposed to have fun. Play the biggest spells you've got. Play those cards you've enjoyed, those cards you've had in your collection for years, you've never gotten a chance to play around with because you don't want to do Legacy, and you don't want to just build a casual 60, build a nice 100-card deck and slap your entire trade binder right into it. Okay, yeah. So I think we're just about done here with the community segment. Any final words to wrap this up before we go into strategy?
No, I mean, I think we have the gist of what got us started and why we're doing it. So, yeah, that's good.
Okay. All right, everybody, so it's time for us to step over into the strategy segment today, and what we're going to be talking about today, more Planeswalkers as Commander. Wow, who didn't see that coming? Stay tuned. And his name is Stitcher, Garolf.
Yeah.
For some reason, my brain would not let me pronounce that.
Oh.
He's been like Garolf has been playing around in my mind. I was about to call him Stitcher Messenger. Like, the Garolf part just completely vanished from my head. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we just got a chance to spend a hefty amount of time in the community segment talking about, you know, how Rogue got around to starting this concept with his group of friends and the various things that he had to, you know, bully them into doing, bribery, and how he dragged them kicking and screaming into playing Planeswalkers as their commanders. So now we're going to sit back and we're going to talk about the strategy, because, you know, Rogue personally built these decks, from my understanding, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. So each one of these decks is something that he slapped together so that his play group could have the options to play around with. And now we're going to be talking about strategy. Let's, you know, get into a little bit more of the nitty gritty on each individual deck. You know, certain types of cards, particular strategies each deck had, you know, when whatever random stuff we can come up with during this particular segment. So, let's start off. You said you built mono color decks, correct?
They were the first five. Since then I've done five, dual colors.
Right. Okay, so how's about we start off with the monocolors? Now, we spent a hefty amount of time talking about, like, you know, the commanders you play for the black one and the red one. So let's see if we can... And we talked about blue, right? That was Tezzeret?
Yeah, we talked a little bit at length about Tezzeret. He's been switched because I think he may be too much.
Yep. So let's go ahead and let's switch over to the other colors that we haven't discussed as much. What about green? We're going to be discussing green real quick. Who was the Planeswalker you chose for the green one?
Nissa Rubain.
Oh, yeah, new Nissa, right?
No.
No, old Nissa.
The old Nissa?
Right.
Oh, man. Oh, my God.
Because new one is World Waker, that's right.
Oh, man, I think when you said Nissa, I'm like, oh, that's awesome. We get to talk about the new Planeswalker. All right, no. Now I gotta hear. Now I'm even more interested. If anybody's, you're anytime right. Anybody's reading Nissa Ravain, I gotta know what's going on.
Heck yeah, well, I have it. I used to have it. It was dismantled a long time ago. I used to have an elf deck. I really loved playing it, and it was super great. I could pretty much switch out either Azuri or Eladmarie. So I rebuilt it.
We have the technology.
Stronger, faster, and I put Nissa at the helm. Original Nissa. I feel like for you, Mark, the new Nissa is probably going to be real good if you're in a kind of a 1v1 meta. She seems really tailored to that. And there are planeswalkers that are tailored to 1v1. Like we had said before, Johnny Vengeant, I think Liliana of the Veil.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, so, and even Jace the Mind Sculptors, obviously. Brutal, yeah. 1v1. Yeah, but Nissa Ravain
permanently has a Jace available all times in his hand every time.
Yeah, that's brutal. But Nissa Ravain was really fun. It's just you just go bonkers with the elves. You get millions of them, and it's wonderful. Now there was a point in the game, in that first game, where I had Nissa blanked. She couldn't do anything because I was Nissa's Chosen was pulled out and put onto the battlefield. Mm-hmm. You just do that for the one time so you can have just an extra elf in hand. And I have sacrifice effects in there so that I can use Nissa's Chosen as the sack outlet and keep going and getting her and bringing her back.
Or sacrificial lamb.
Yeah, she's the sacrificial lamb. And then Erebos was out, and I had, so her second ability is the +1, you gain 2 life elf on the battlefield. So that was just, I had Nissa's Chosen on board, and that Erebos out, so I could do nothing with her. But that is one of the planeswalkers that I got to ultimate.
Huh.
And dumped out all of my elves.
Wow. Okay, now this is a story I gotta hear. I mean, I hope we're not going too far off topic, but I have never seen anyone ultimate Nissa before, and I always, like, in an elf deck, really? Obviously, it's the only story. Yeah, I never have. Only because, I've never seen anyone play her before. Like, even in my elf deck, I mean, it doesn't say much. I'm a terrible player, so, I probably pick a crappy card. But even in my elf deck, Nissa doesn't make the cut. So, but she seems so awesome, just as a flavor thing, and, I mean,
yeah.
I always like her as a character.
Elf deck.
Yeah,
else,
you know?
If you do a planeswalker, who else is there? There's nobody. You don't put Karuk there.
Karuk's yeah, exactly.
For a beast deck.
Did you have to play around her? Did you have to do extra things to get the counters? Or was just, did you have to just wait, what is it, 5 or 6 turns until you get the ultimate or something?
Well, yeah, but everything's a plus on her. I might have flown under the radar a bit to get her up there. That's pretty much, I'm the elf guy. Hee-hee, look at me, I'm playing elves. And, Tezzeret's putting out, Darksteel Forge and making everything indestructible. And a Johnny's over there making double strikers that hit for, ungodly amounts.
Oh.
And Liliana just is humping out swamps like a factory. so I flew under the radar in that game.
That's awesome.
I actually also got proliferated on once, just because the guy was, it was basically,
being generous.
It was you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. I basically told him, I could blow out all your artifacts. It was Tezzeret. I said, I could blow out all your artifacts. And he's like, how about I proliferate on your Nissa? And I'm like, yeah, alright.
Nice.
And so then I used those elves to get him at, -50 life. That's when the whole sacrifice thing happened, and he had to sacrifice his indestructible angel, losing in the game on the spot.
Yeah, that was a nice, under the table shank, right after this.
Yeah,
deal
there was
done.
Lefty. That was backstabbing.
That is awesome. That
I
is
specialized
the best.
So keep in mind, people, when you're playing around with Rogue, he's got a gun under the table, and he's just way.
Putin of magic. I'm not good.
Oh, that's awesome.
Okay. So, we talked, Green, we talked Nissa, so, obviously Nissa is an elf tribal deck. I've had some personal experience with Nissa. When she first showed up, I played her in 60s. I used her kind of as a, what was it, I believe it was a third, fourth kind of, I consider her to be more like an elf lord than anything else. Mainly because it's the other lords are giving your guys all +1/+1s and stuff. She's basically the elf lord that's a well-wisher. Who basically sits there, she's waiting, and she's giving you all this extra value, but inevitably she just kind of whistles and the entire crew shows up.
Yep. And the biggest thing I tried to do with her was take advantage of the Nissa's Chosen. So, like a birthing pod type deal, where I'm pulling out Nissa's Chosen, putting it down, sacrificing it, putting out, you know, something with three or whatever, and then going and getting Nissa's Chosen back. Mm. So I could just keep doing that. And there's a whole bunch of Elf Lords. Azuri costs three, Elvish Champion, Arch Druid, they all cost three. So Nissa's Chosen costs, I think, two, right?
Nissa's Chosen is, two. It's, I think it's double green, 2/3.
Yeah, so you
said when it dies, it goes to the graveyard. Instead of going to graveyard, it goes back into your library or the bottom of the library or something like that.
Yeah, and then you go tutor it up with Nissa again. So with Birthing Pod, it's just kind of a, it's kind of a little engine I thought would be kind of fun. There's other little sacrifice things in there. I'll save that for Secret Tech, but you know, the Plague Maw Beast is where you sacrifice a creature and tap it and proliferate.
And the other good thing for having Nissa's Chosen is Nissa is your commander. Like, you know, if you have Nissa down and the Chosen happens to go away, and let's say you're like using Sensei's Divining Top, you know the top three cards of your library are garbage, you can just search up the Chosen, slap it on the board, and get like a free shuffle.
Oh, totally. Yeah, yeah. Are you still in the library? Absolutely.
So let's see, we've talked green, we've talked black, we've talked blue because Tezzeret just, you know, kind of keeps showing up in these conversations. Nosy bastard.
Hard not to
talk red. Okay, white. White. You said that the white planeswalker, you chose not to go with Gideon, and you chose to go with a Johnny, correct?
A Johnny Collar of the Pride, to be specific, since there's like four Johnnies.
Yeah, there's like 17 of those guys floating around. Almost as many as Jace now, right?
Yeah, it's a lot. I went with Collar of the Pride. He's 3 mana to come down, which I really liked that, and that middle ability of giving something flying and double strike seemed pretty appropriate for equipment. It's kind of a Voltron-y type build, but you're not obviously Voltroning up the commander. You're Voltroning up a guy and putting all this equipment on him, giving him flying and double strike and getting in with, protections and stuff. I've since replaced, a Johnny with Elspeth so that you can have that soldier token, that inevitability of having a creature that you don't have with a Johnny Collar of the Pride. Because if you don't have a creature, his abilities are nil.
So I'm assuming you went with, Elspeth Nightarne?
Nightarne, yep.
Okay. So let's see, we've gone over the monocolors now so far between the community and the beginning of this. We've talked about your red-white deck a little bit. Would you like to go in a little bit more detail about that? Mark, is there a particular, like, dual color combination that you want to try and ask him about? Mark?
Oh, sorry, man. I muted myself on that one.
Okay. it happens.
Yeah.
Trust me, it happens so much. You see, like, why are you not listening to me?
My headset has one of those, like, little handset, you know, mutes, and I usually do it when other people are talking. So I'm sitting there staring at the mute button, and it has a big red flashing light on it, and I just keep talking. Like, I'm talking to Ro, like, he can hear me. So,
What were you saying?
I didn't get too far. I was just wondering, you know, did you guys, when you were choosing, or I guess when it was just you, because you built all the little, for lack of a better term, like the pre-con Planeswalker decks, was there a reason you went with just the monocolored first instead of the dual-colored? Like, I know monocolored sometimes gets a bad rep in Commander, even though it's monocolored decks are some of my favorite things to run. So I was just wondering why you went monocolored versus, you know, the dual-colored, or I guess, like you said, Uriah's build of the Nicobolas, like, is he the only 3-color Planeswalker?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so far, but I expect more. But yeah, right now he's the only one.
Yeah. So yeah, how come you went with the monocolored one throw?
That's a good question. There's a lot of answers to that. Partly I wanted to build clean, simple, these decks do what that color does the best type, almost good stuffy. I don't want to say good stuff, but it's more like, what would you think of a black deck? Well, it does, you know, attrition, removal, and graveyard recursion. And that's, you know, so I just built that deck. What does white do? And I wanted to get really down to basics with the decks themselves and see how the monocolored planeswalkers, and plus the precons are all going to be monocolored. So that's why I did that as an original test. And I got into 3-color and 5-color for a long time. And then I decided, you know what, this is too all over the place for me. I want to streamline this more. And I started getting into more 2-color stuff. And then now I'm just in a monocolor mood, I guess, is what it really is.
It's the right season for it.
Yeah, it is. And the pre-con definitely pushed me more in that direction.
Yep. Well, now, I know you mentioned before, Rome, you were talking about, like, certain kind of archetypes that get nerfed. Like, obviously, Voltron is pretty much a no-go unless you're trying to do the Gideon deck. And that seems like it would be fun exactly once before you got tired of it, you know? So, like, other archetypes, I'm wondering, like, you know, like the original Jace, like Jace Berylyn, seems like it'd be great for like a mono blue group Hulk deck, if there even is such a thing.
Sure there is.
And I was just wondering, like, have other kind of interesting twists on archetypes come up since you guys have been doing this?
Not entirely. I thought about doing the mono blue group Hulk. I've also thought about doing the mono blue mill with Jace. What is his name?
Emo Jace? Yeah.
Yeah, Emo Jace. But I haven't gotten that far yet. I'm not a big group hug fan. Like, even having it in my game, if I'm not playing it, I get a little, I'm like, ah, oh, jeez.
Yeah, it gets a little dirtly.
Yeah, it gets real dirtly. And my group has a tendency to just devolve into nothing but a bunch of dirtles sitting around and put counters on their own stuff. So I didn't want to go that route yet, but I know it's going to happen. You know, it's fine.
Yeah, it's kind of inevitable, right?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, cool. Well, what other kind of decks have you seen, like, your brother or your other members of your playgroup build on their own now?
So, my brother built, he's real aggressive, so he built real aggressive decks. He built Xenagos, and he told me the other day he was playing with the other guys, because they were playing without me there. I wasn't even over there when they last played. And he did, 100 points of trample damage on like turn 8 or 9 with Xenagos.
Yeah.
I didn't go into super detail on how he did it, but I'm pretty sure it had to do with just powering out huge trampley creatures with, he's real, you know, big card, big power toughness. I love trample kind of player. And, he did 100 points of damage. And I'm sure he just used that mana ability that Xenagos has on his +2, I think. And powered out some pretty big beaters. Now, his Sarkon is pretty funny. It's real griefy. It kills a lot of stuff. And this is Sarkon the Mad. I have Sarkon Vol, and he's fun. But Sarkon the Mad, he can just keep bringing him out, either making himself dragon tokens or getting rid of stuff, and drawing cards, and which I think, you know, the black-red kind of needs. It gets real...
Yeah, you get dry real quick.
Yeah, you do dry up with that. I mean, I usually play Karabek, and I find that one, Karabek's the last card you ever play. And, yeah, so the card advantage that Sarkon the Mad gave him was really cool. And so that one is kind of the usual Rakdos Grief deck. His Sorin deck did a good, little token-y kind of thing, because, you know, he's got that emblem where all your creatures get 1/0.
The Lord of Innistrad Sorin?
Yeah, the Lord of Innistrad. We didn't use Sorin Markov. He just seemed rude.
Yeah.
And so that was... You know,
like, if this actually did become a thing, I could easily see him then becoming, going onto the ban list. Just, if this if Planeswalkers as an actual commander became, like, an actual thing.
Hmm? Yeah, he could be bannable.
Yeah, well, you know, I have a commander that I can play, and as soon as I play him, you're going to 10. And even if you kill him, so what? He'll come down, and now you're going to 10. Now you're going to 10. And now you're going to 10.
Yeah. I mean, I could see him, Tezzeret, maybe Karn, Tezzeret the Seeker, and maybe Karn being the big offenders. But, I mean, some of the other ones just seem really cool. You know, looking through the list of Planeswalkers here, I mean, I would love to build, like, an Asian Obolus deck.
Oh, I want to talk about him.
Oh, my God. Or, like,
that then.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but tell me all about it. I want to know.
I love Tezzeret, Agent of Obolus. That's what I turned the Tezzeret deck into and had so much more fun. I mean, putting out Darksteel Murs and Darksteel Ingots and making them 5/5s that you just can't get through, that was really fun. And it's somewhat of a control build in the way that I'm not really attacking with these 5/5 indestructibles. Yeah, sure you can, but they're not going to get through. You know, they'll get chump blocked for days. They're really just these huge blockers. Yeah, Ornithopter. I got my foiled Ornithopter in there.
That is when the power comes out. Better watch out.
I know, right? So you sit back behind this wall of these 5/5 artifacts, and you either do his ultimate. His ultimate's easy to get to.
That's awesome.
And what I ended up doing was it's not maybe the nicest thing. I mean, I won the game in a fun way, I think, but it's a Mindslaver lock with Academy Ruins. I know that's not the most exciting thing, but it was when I was on the back foot. So it was like, a guy was playing he was playing Xenagos the God, and then another guy was playing Grimgrin. So we were mixing in this game.
Okay.
So I think Sean is the guy who told you to have me on the show, and he was asking me to do a mixture of, Planeswalkers and Legends. And I actually know Sean in real life. We're good friends.
I believe that's, Mr.
Mystery.
Mystery Meat.
Yeah.
Oh, Mystery. Oh, that's how it's pronounced?
Mystery Meat, yeah.
I gotcha.
Yeah,
all this time I've been pronouncing it Mr. E. Meat.
That's a really
funny one. Yeah, it's the electronic meat. It's not like normal meat.
Yeah, we're friends in the real. And, he was asking me to put him up against some regular legends. So we did do some of those games. And I did win with the Planeswalker Commander. Both times we did it. Yeah, we only did it one time. And I did win with the Planeswalker Commanders both times we did it. But it wasn't for lack of them, you know, I wasn't oppressing them for the most part. It was, the Xenagos guy was really aggressive. You know, the Grimgrin guy had the infinite, you know, Rooftop Storm Grave Digger combo out, but he couldn't get his Grimgrin past my indestructible artifacts. So he just railed my brother who was playing a Johnny Vengeance. So we had 2-2. And a Johnny Vengeance, it was really sad. He got slaughtered. And then Xenagos couldn't come at me because he didn't have the trample, I think, so he couldn't get past the indestructible artifact, which was really, it was quite powerful to have that defense, I will say. You know, Darksteel, I even run the Darksteel Relic, that zero mana cost, do nothing artifact. That's indestructible. Yeah, I mean, you can make it a 5/5.
Yeah, I mean,
built for Guzzard.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I run a dirtily, like, I'm the dude who loves artifacts, because I have the Karn deck, but, yep. Like, I had retooled one of my old Shroom decks, and it was getting a little oppressive, so when Sidri came out in the last set of precons, I had done basically the same thing, you know, like, Sidri, like, herp derp, I'm gonna make my Darksteel whatever, and indestructible, you know what I mean? And,
yep.
But with the added thing of giving it lifelink and death touch, and I love that deck. That deck is so stupid fun, it's just fun. And, like, putting Tezzeret at the helm just seems, I mean, Tezzeret is amazing in that Sidri deck, because he's doing all the things you want to do anyway, so I can imagine, like, just him on his own has got to be a ton of fun to play.
It was really fun, and yeah, like I said, I did get out Mindslaver, and my ultimate dream is to actually get a Mindslaver and make it a 5/5 and kill somebody with it, but I didn't do that, because I was on the back foot, like I said. I was really, all he needed was some trample, and the herd was coming at me. He had Overwhelming Stampede in his hand, I think, ready to go on his next turn. And so what I did is I had already Mindslavered the Grimgrin guy so I could sack all his creatures to Grimgrin. I liked that idea. So I did that, just wiped his board, and killed some of the other Planeswalkers that were on the board, because the Xenagos guy, he had actually Xenagos the Planeswalker in his deck, so that was on the field at the same time. And so I killed that with the Grimgrin guy stuff, and then I was able to just take infinite turns after that and use Xenagos to kill Grimgrin and then go, you know, just in a loop, because I had Academy Ruins, so it was just the Mindslaver was going back on top of my library every turn.
Now that we've gotten a chance to, like, discuss a lot of the decks and so, something I actually kind of wanted to ask, I'm not sure if this ever actually came up in any of your games, you know, since you constructed the decks and you put the Planeswalkers at the helm. But the Planeswalkers that could potentially have extra copies of themselves in the deck, how did you handle that? Like, say, for instance, you had, let's say, Elspeth Knight Errant out on the field.
Yep.
And you had Elspeth Sun's Champion in hand. And
okay.
You decide to cast Sun's Champion. Would you send the commander back to the command zone? Or what were the rulings or stipulations you guys chose to do to operate with that? Just like regular Planeswalkers, or did that never come up because you didn't have any extra one of them in your deck at the time?
That never came up because there was never any extras. We actually made sort of a soft rule that your Commander Walker is really the only Planeswalker in the deck. Now,
gotcha.
It's not like a hard rule. I know that Uriah is going to put some Planeswalkers into his Nicol Bolas deck. They won't, I mean...
Yeah, but it's not like it's like a secondary... Yeah, but the worst thing that's going to happen to him is, like, you know, he's going to have this Nicol Volos Planeswalker out with his Nico Volos legendary creature out, and it's pretty much the exact same thing if the rules have been reversed.
Well, yeah, and that's actually allowed. You can actually do that.
Yeah, like that's something you can do because, you know, like from a flavor standpoint, it's kind of stupid. It's like that moment when Nico Volos is standing inside the Maelstrom and he sees a copy of himself. He just kind of shrugs it now.
There you go.
But like, well, here, it's like, you know,
I mean, that. The Venser deck, the Venser Sojourner, would obviously have the Spell Shaper or the Shaper Savant in that deck.
Right?
That's just as dumb, but there's no way that a Blink deck wouldn't be playing the other Venser too.
Yeah, and I built Venser as
Venser's
well.
Like supposed to be a time traveler, right?
I don't know. Who knows? I don't know. I know he's, you know, real generous with his heart.
No. He's a teleporter. He's not a time traveler. The time traveler was Karn. Karn can technically be in the same place as another Karn.
Oh, Jesus. I can't even keep track of the chronology of the Terminator movies. I don't think we can get into this.
Yeah, so now that we've gone over that, we've discussed, like, the concept of Planeswalkers being used as the commanders. You know, we've never, as Rose said, he's never actually gotten a chance to see what would happen or come up with any, like, hard set rules. But I'm pretty sure the concept would be the same. Like, you know, if your Planeswalker was a commander and you happened to cast another Planeswalker, you'd have the option to send the Planeswalker commander back to the command zone. And then just use the other one, and then when that one's gone, just cast your commander again, or however you choose.
Yeah, that's what I would guess.
I'm just going with it'd probably be some type of weird thing, and I'm pretty sure there's some type of odd shenanigans you can play around. It's like, oh, I'm going to activate my commander, and I'm going to play this other copy of it, send my commander to the command zone, activate the effect of this, and now I'm going to play the commander and get him back and get two activations
like
of my
that.
Commander in the same turn.
I didn't really think of that, but I kind of like it.
Yeah, it's like one of those things, like, I can easily see it just kind of happening. It's going to be one of those things that would occur.
Yeah, no, I like it.
But let's see. Have we talked about all the dual color decks so far?
Not all of them, and I can talk about a few more. I did say, tease that Sarkhan Vol was my favorite.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You were talking about Sarkhan Vol being your favorite. You said he had a kind of a token strategy, right?
Tokens. I went with tokens. I used to have a Throwmoth deck. I took it apart a long time ago, but really, I missed it, so I decided to go down that path again with some Devour guys, because he has that, you know, he has that threaten ability in the middle where he takes an opponent's creature.
Mm-hmm.
So you can eat it if you have your Devour guys. Also tokens with the +1/+1 in haste that is his +1 ability.
Right.
That's really powerful. I mean, if you can put out a lot of guys and give them all +1. I mean, imagine just, you know, Avenger of Zendikar. And all those plant tokens have haste and +1/+1 from Sarkhan. That's pretty good.
Exactly.
Also, that's the deck where I've got Doubling Season in there, which is real nasty. That comes down on the same, you know, if that comes down and Sarkhan's able to come out, he comes out able to ultimate and puts out, what is it, like 10 4/4 dragons?
Ooh.
Yeah, it's right, because he has that thing where he throws down 5 4/4 dragons with just his ultimate, but if you get him there and you have Doubling Season, you get 10. Ooh, you could throw Parallel Lives in there and get like 15.
It's in there. And you actually would get 20
because
it doubles.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because it doubles the doubles.
Yeah, well, and actually because of Doubling Season, when you put out Sarkhan, you can ultimate him right away. That being said, you know, Doubling Season is really telegraphing what you're about to do, so it's not like it's uninteractable. It is a scramble for your opponents to say, oh my god, we have to get rid of that thing. But if you don't, you're gonna win the game.
But in the same token, like a Doubling Season with a Planeswalker as your commander would become just as much of a threat. And, you know, it'll probably be more of a meta call. People will probably start playing a little more enchantment hate.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
A few more counter spells just to be able to,
Blue,
you know,
has
make sure
an extra tide, and that's nothing to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, in that case, like, if you wanted to be a little more political about it, bro, because you said you were, you know, you're a pretty political player, would you play that, what's the enchantment, that Primal, not Primal Surge, Primal Vigor, like a Doubling Season for everybody?
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't double on Planeswalkers, only on tokens of +1/+1 counters. Because it kind of, they punted on the whole Planeswalker thing. They didn't want that to happen again.
But with, Sarkhan Vol tossing out dragon tokens, you could still at least get, like, you know, more dragons.
I don't play it. I might. Maybe I did put it in there. No, I think I did put it in there because I thought that I was going to get the most value out of it. I don't mind helping other people out.
As long as you're getting the better end of the stick.
As long as I'm getting the most out of it. Like, I put Howling Mine in Tezzeret because it actually says if it's untapped, people draw a card.
So it says where it taps it.
Yeah,
oh, no, it turns it into a creature.
I swing in grappling mind. I could steal the draws from everybody.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I thought that would be pretty funny.
5/5 indestructible howling mind that no one can draw off of because it's too busy trying to smash your face in.
Oh my God, that is so, that's my dream. With the mind slaver right next to it, swinging it for 5.
It's like you won that game. Yeah, how'd you do it? I killed it with mind slaver and, howling mind. Oh, yeah, real original. No. Unless I killed him with mind slaver, I mean, like, turn that bad boy sideways, took 10.
That's exactly right.
Oh, that's awesome. Hey, you know, speaking of the other two-colored decks, you know, the other planeswalker that I think would work really well on this, I mean, maybe this is just off the top of my head, would be Vraska the Unseen. She seems like she'd be pretty strong. I mean, you know, she's Vindicate on a stick, she's got those crazy assassins, which we're probably never going to ultimate anyway, but, you know...
Well, she's in green, so you could double unseen.
Have you played against her?
Yes, my brother-in-law has had a Sovra deck. And it's brutal, and it doesn't even have to have Sovra at the helm to be brutal. So he just was able to just say, "Oh, I'll just put Vraska here." The deck is just, I mean, it's crazy. So it's real, you know, attrition-y. He can keep everybody off the creatures. He can start keeping you off of lands and stuff, and it's nasty. And the only problem with it is there's a big fear with those tokens, but it does come down and just vindicate a planeswalker, and that's. That's a powerful thing. And some of them, like I said, the red ones can actually kind of do that with direct damage. Yeah, her and then the new Garouk obviously just literally reads Destroy Another Planeswalker.
I think, like I said, like I can easily see her being like she's the planeswalker you play down, and if there's nothing like to vindicate, I can easily see her like ticking up to her ultimate because nobody wants to attack her. It's like
right.
we all know we should. But in the same token, we all know that, like, all right, which one of us is going to be the one that's going to, you know, bite the bullet, lose a guy, and try to keep Vraska from ultimating? Because, like, you know, granted, I'm going to slowly keep her from ultimating now, but, you know, she'll just come back down when she dies. And then we'll kind of be back at square one, and I'll be down a guy.
Yeah.
So I could easily see her being, like, the planeswalker that would probably have the best option to ultimate, not because of the fact that she couldn't be dealt with, but because people at the table would be too busy trying not to deal with her because they don't want to be the ones to get the card disadvantage.
Yeah, but I think that people might be scared enough for those assassin tokens.
You get like right there tickling the ultimate. It's like, you know, right there in reach. And it's like, that's when everybody's like, okay, look, we've got choices here and we can let this happen and just all die to 1/1 assassins and let the game end if that's what we're into. But it's probably best that we all join together like right now and stop that.
Yeah.
That's when Felidar Griff, like, throws in, like, red. A token.
And the direct damage that red does. Chandra Blaze, we touched on a little bit. She won a pretty swingy big game that was really, really a fantastic finish. In one turn, he had, and this is all due to the wheel, so he got the cards he needed. My brother-in-law was playing the deck, and it was down to him. There was Sarkon the Mad and Sorin Lord of Innistrad out, and he took a Necropolis Regent with a Threaten, which is the one where it puts on 1/1 counters equal to the damage. Does all your creatures do that? Is the ability it grants. And he swung in at Sarkon the Mad player, putting, it was like a 9/9 because it had a boost from Threaten. So it put 9 counters on it after it hit him. So then he played Relentless Assault and hit him again, making it a 36/36. And then he flung it at the Sorin player. So if you had, I mean, that was a powerful term. We're talking about a Threaten, then a Relentless Assault, and then a Fling. But he had all the mana and all the cards to be able to do that, and that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that is living the dream for that deck,
man. Was living the dream. It really was.
Now, Ro, you said before, I think, what Jace did you use? Did you use Architect of Thought when you did the mono? Now, how did that turn out?
I was actually going to talk about that. I haven't actually tried that one yet.
Oh, okay.
It's gonna be not a well-liked deck, though. That's a mono, it's another mono blue. I don't know how to make a mono blue deck that's fun. I made it pretty, pretty controlling. A lot of control magics and clones and some counter spell in it. And then some big finishers.
Yeah, Yeah, well, hey, it's mono blue. What are you going to do?
Yeah, what are you going to do? Extra turns? That's pretty fun, too.
Yeah, I know, right?
Like, we've only got so many options here. There's extra turns. We can count everything. We can control
the
tempo.
Draw your library.
We can draw all the cards. We can mill you. What else do you want me to do? What can we do?
Yeah, it's unpleasant no matter which angle you're going. Maybe I'll do the Jace.
Like the best option for it. Yeah, that could be the best option. Try to do like either a Jace group hug deck or like a group hug deck, just like, you know, drawing the cards for everybody. But then people will probably get pissed because they think you're trying to like, you know, win the game by making a go to zero in the library.
Or, you know what I like is draw the cards for everybody and put a ton of draw in for yourself as well, and then just have Laboratory Maniac be your only win con. just go for it.
Yep. Hey, I mean, you could do the Emo Jace Mill deck and then see how many games you lose. Just keep a tally.
Yeah, right.
You know.
I only have to mill 400 cards. That's fine.
Yeah. So that's been a pretty decent point for the strategy segment. Fellas, you guys feel comfortable talking about anything else in the strategy segment?
Oh, the only other one I wanted to talk about that I built was, and I only got to try once, and I kind of got a little land screwed, was Group Relentless. I went with the... a graveyardy dredgy type theme, kind of mostly what you'd consider like a Gerard deck or a Varl's deck, where you get to try and flip through.
You know what, I'm actually giving that a try now that I'm thinking about it, because I have a copy of Gag Relentless, and I've never gotten a chance to actually cast him in Commander.
Yeah.
Mainly because, like, the deck he's in is either A, a lot of dredge, and, you know, he ends up just, you know,
that's
somehow in the graveyard,
the
and it's like,
sure.
Oh well. Or he's in the red, green, black deck, but I'm not playing him at the point I haven't drawn him, or because I've got something else I'd rather play and let, like, Crush get a little bigger. So he's never actually, like, I've never had a chance to, like, you know, slap that bad boy in a table, even though he's in, like, three decks. So I might actually have to try that later. You know what I'm thinking about? You know what, that's what I'll do. Once this is over with, and I've actually done all the rest of the stuff I have to do, I'll toss Garrick Relentless at the helm of my green black deck and see how that runs.
Yeah, why not? I mean, it's like a mini game in and of itself, flipping
it
and stuff.
All right, so now that we've done with strategy, let's all get ready to pack up our stuff and dig into our treasure chest and see what kind of secret tech we can get out from our technology. Now that we've actually gotten a chance to talk about strategies, we've gotten a chance to see how this format came together. Rue's here, and he's going to tell us some of his favorite piece of secret tech cards that you'd want to do if you are intending on playing with a Planeswalker as your commander. I'm pretty sure a lot of these cards, there'll probably be a few staples here that you already know of. It'll probably be like a Dublin Caesar or something like that. And, you know, if you're playing a Planeswalker as your commander, why not throw a Chain Bill in there? I mean, why not? I mean, you've got 99 cards. It's only one. Might as well, right? So, let's see. Rue, we have some secret texts here. So, you have these in a particular color organization, or is it like a particular style you want to start with?
No, I'll just list the ones I have listed here on this these notes I have. So, we obviously talked about Doubling Season. That's...
Boom.
We kind of don't need to beat that dead horse. That's...
Yeah,
if you're in the green deck, yeah, you're probably running that. Rings of Brightheart.
Good.
Yep. So, and Super Friends players know about that one. So you get to up on a Planeswalker activation. Okay, Gilder Baron, if you're going to build a Kiora, the Crashing Wave.
I was going to ask you about that. That sounds like a fun deck.
I think that my friend Defrost felt dibs on that. He's going to get it and build it. Extra turns. So, you know, extra turns.
Oh, everybody's favorites.
Yeah, they're obviously already powerful, but they're a little more powerful now.
What's next here? What's another card?
We're talking about extra turns and how it's obviously already powerful. It gets more powerful. And, there's not much else to say about that. It's obviously just an extra activation. Vampire Hexmage and Hex Parasite are another one to talk about. Those are cards that are previously known for some of their, combo-y type stuff they can do, but now they can just kill, Planeswalkers.
You know what, that actually does come up, like, that actually is a pretty cool idea, now that I think about it, because a Vampire Hexmage would actually be really good if you're in a meta where, like, planeswalkers are rampant as, like, the generals. You know, yep. Vampire hex maze that you can, like, recur for one way or another. Like, even if you stick one under, going back to the mimic bat. Even if you stick one under the mimic bat, you can always just be like, oh, you see a planeswalker's about to do something? Pay three, put a vampire hex maze token in play, I'm gonna sack it, remove all those counters. Yep. Put them back in the command zone.
That's good. So we talked a little bit about proliferate with, I think the most powerful is Inexorable Tide. Just anytime you cast a spell, proliferate, that seems pretty overwhelming. Obviously the Contagion Clasp and the Contagion Engine are pretty good. Proliferate on command. Engine being better, doing it twice, that's unreal. Spread the Sickness. Kill spell that just does an incidental proliferate on it. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Volt Charge is a lightning bolt with a proliferate tacked on. Fuel for the Cause, counterspell with proliferate.
That actually does come up with, like, because this would actually be, like, a good reason to actually put all the cards that have proliferate into your thing. Even if you're just playing, like, a mono-colored thing, it's like, hey, look, I get to vote your guy, and my commander gets to go a little higher. And if I ever find a way to recur it again or reuse it again, you know, it's like, it saves me a turn of pumping them up or plussing them up.
Really good value. Fuel for the Cause is counterspell with proliferate. And Tezzeret's Gambit's just, like, a divination with proliferate tacked on, and there's nothing wrong with that. If you get a free loyalty counter, that's just gravy. I like that, and no matter what, it's gonna be relevant. And I talked a little bit about Plague Maw Beast. That's one of my favorites. Tap and sack a creature to proliferate.
Man, Sonar's Mirrodin block is getting some serious love out of the Planeswalker commanders.
It does. It probably gets the most love out of any set. Just because of that proliferate, it's,
and, yep. And the main thing is, like, you know, proliferate is the kind of thing where, like, you might see it here or there, and, like, if you're playing a commander deck and you're having a legendary creature, unless your legendary creature has something to do with a particular type of token, proliferate may be in there.
Yep.
But if you've got a planeswalker as your commander, you're basically, anytime you get draw that proliferate card, you're almost guaranteed to have a target for it, and that target is going to be a loyalty counter added onto your planeswalker at the very least.
Right.
So it's like, you know, now you think they would just have, like, added value. It's like there's no reason not to play them if you're using a planeswalker as your commander. Because,
yeah,
like, you know, you just saved your planeswalker a whole turn of, you know, dealing with something.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
Especially the instant speed ones. It's like, oh, your opponent thinks they have got enough damage to kill your planeswalker. It's like, no, proliferate, burn damage to your dude, planeswalker lives, I go to next turn.
Even if they're not worried about you ultimating.
Right.
And then you give them a surprise ultimate.
Yeah, you just, like, chain a bunch of proliferate cards together. It's like, take this, you take this, that dies, proliferate, 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 and look who's ready to ultimate game.
Yep. Now, Ro, I don't know, you mentioned this a little bit earlier in your mono black deck, but obviously with all this proliferate stuff flying around, like, Infect just got a hell of a lot better. Like, even better than it already is in Commander.
Yeah, definitely. We also nerf Infect a little bit in our play group. We make it half-life. If we, for some reason, are playing with 40, it's 20, and if we're playing with 30, it's 15. We just decided to do that because people get real butthurt at the 10 when they get shotgunned out of the game. And really, 10, 15, it's not going to matter. It's going to be enough either way in one shot, or you're not.
Yeah. So you get hit one more time with Skittles.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody gets two shots now.
Yeah, exactly. It takes two shots. Yeah, but that proliferate, it's relevant on pretty much every front. And when it's tacked onto cards, you can get, you know, the use out of anyway, like Spread the Sickness is a kill spell. That's, you know, that's something I want to run. A Volt Charge is a lightning bolt, you know, just replace your lightning bolt with Volt Charge. I know it's a little bit above the curve, but I believe it's three. But if you're getting to bolt something, or God knows, a planeswalker, and put a counter on yours, that's, you're riding the train to Value Town.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So, any more Team Protect you've got for us here?
Yeah, I think another group of cards that deserves a second look is any card that says Planeswalker on it, actually. Just anything. Like Hero's Downfall and Dread Border. I mean, these are cards that just come down and kill a Planeswalker. Dread Border at sorcery speed, and only in Rakdos. So that's kind of Sarkon the Mad's Planeswalker killer. But Hero's Downfall can kill a Planeswalker at instant speed in every deck that has black in it.
Now, it kind of, I guess, building off of that one. I mean, obviously, anything that says Planeswalker is kill a Planeswalker is pretty powerful. But do you guys consider the Planeswalkers as legendary, as legends too? So, you know, because it's in the command zone, or like, do you modify? Like you said, Hero's Downfall. But what's the one from Kamigawa that says kill legendary creature? Like, would you also use that and like consider the Planeswalker a legendary creature for that type of thing? Or
you know, that never actually occurred to me. That never came up. I don't think anybody would. Hero's Demise, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, there we go.
I don't think anybody was really running that card.
Yeah, no one runs that card anyway, I think. Yeah. Except for me. It's such a
I mean,
but
I guess
I was just curious.
If you had out Sabo Tavok, then you might have to and I have that card in the deck.
Yeah, I know, I do too. It's in the same of course it's in the same deck with Hero's Demise, because why not?
Oh my gosh. Well, I built a thing that Uriah and I did, and my brother and my brother-in-law's, we built the original Elder Dragon decks all with old frames.
Nice.
So that's Sabo Tavok. So I knew I would be going up against like Elder Dragons, and his ability was going to be worth it. So
yeah, that's hilarious.
That's been pretty fun and pretty goofy games, real janky stuff. Yeah, I debated saying Vivictus Asmodee was my favorite in general, but he's not.
But I mean, hey, he's better in Chromium. I used to rock
Chromium so bad.
Yeah.
So anyway, another thing that my brother put in, Blood Reckoning. So whenever a creature attacks a planeswalker you control, the creature's controller loses one life. Just another little card that says planeswalker on it. I don't know the exact rules. Like, so if you have a propaganda and somebody wants to swing at your planeswalker, they still have to pay the two, right?
What was that?
If you have like a propaganda or a ghostly prison and someone swings at your planeswalker, they still have to pay the two, right?
If you're being attacked, even if you're attacking at your planeswalker,
I have to look at the wording
because I remember, because I know they have effects like that where if it attacks you or your planeswalker, they have to pay extra.
The reason I ask is because, yes, Sphere of Safety says if it attacks you or a planeswalker you control, they pay one for each enchantment you control, for each creature. But, you know, obviously Propaganda and Ghostly Prison don't say that. They were out before planeswalkers. And I didn't know how the replacement effect of switching over to a planeswalker works. That is kind of a judge question.
Yeah, that's something I'm going to have to look at. Maybe they might have been errated to have you or a planeswalker you control on them. You know, because they're, you know, old cards.
I think it's more based on the rule, though.
Right. But it's probably more based around, like, the rule of, like, the concept of declaring an attack as opposed to them attacking you.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but, you know, it is a planeswalker control, so I'm pretty, I think it still counts, but I'd have to look into it. You know.
I just pulled it because I just happened to be on magiccards.info, and it said, I guess this is a really recent ruling, actually, in February this year. It says, for propaganda, unless some effect explicitly says otherwise, a creature that can't attack you can still attack a planeswalker control.
There you go! So then Sphere of Safety is a tech card that you want to look at, because that one says you are a planeswalker you control. That's why I started this conversation. I have that in my notes, Sphere of Safety, with like a question mark. So that is actually the only propaganda effect that I can think of that protects your
walkers.
So that's one to keep in mind. And that's in white. That's good because they don't get much love when it comes to this tech.
Yeah, that's true.
There's no proliferate in white. There's no white doubling season. The most you can do is the contagion engine and class thing. Maybe Throne of Death. You know what? That might be worth tossing in that deck, actually. If they start blowing up your equipment, sack it to the throne. Proliferate.
Yeah. I always liked Throne of Death. I never played it, but yeah.
Yeah, I was big into Scars Block. I like artifacts too, Mark.
Okay, so is there any more like secret tech that you want to toss in there?
No, you talked about the manuals. We had Proliferate and the Rings and the Chain Veil's obviously the newest addition to the whole tech. I'm sure there's stuff out there, and I'd like to know other secret tech. If anybody else has it, you can put it in the comments section or hit me up on Twitter. That'd be great, because, and I'm sure there's Super Friends players out there that know a lot about.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, like, in about, like, 2 weeks' time on Twitter, you're going to get, like, a bunch of things. I can't believe you forgot this. You can't tell me you were playing Planeswalkers and you didn't include. It happens. But,
let me put out there right now that, yeah, it, I don't know everything, and I would love to have some more input.
Okay, so, you know, now that, Ro has talked to you, but that you can contact, we're gonna go ahead and, you know, we're gonna put a bow on this. We're gonna go to the outro and give that contact information so you can, you know, tell us how bad we are at this game. So, hold on, everybody. Pack your bags. It's time to go home. Episode of Commander Cast, episode 162, right?
Yeah.
I had another right. Yeah.
Take that, Will.
I want to thank my guests for coming out. Let's start with Ro, because, you know, he's basically the man who pulled this episode together with all of his, you know, hard-earned hours of just deck building and testing.
Yeah.
Ro, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I had a blast. This has been great. I should also give a shout out to, I think it's Jonathan Plug on East Coast Commander. He's really been pretty into the whole thing on Twitter and came up with the hashtag CMDRWalker. And I've just been kind of chronicling, if anybody wants to check it out, I've been chronicling my experiences with these games on Twitter with the hashtag CMDRWalker. And I'll continue to do so.
And our sister site, East Coast Commander. They're amazing. Go check them out. Articles up all the time as well. You know, Mark, thanks for coming out. Thanks for helping, you know, fill in that spot as my co-host or guest host or whatever it is that you've got. Because, you know, this is the second time you've been back.
Yeah, I guess you guys haven't got sick of me yet. So.
Yeah.
Hey, like, thanks for having me.
You can put it with Eric and Will this long. I'm pretty sure, you know, it's perfectly fine. And, you know, we're all really in love with that sound, that voice.
Well,
okay, so now that we, you know, you have any shout-outs you want to throw out there before we get into the contact?
No, just thanks, and another shout-out again to Ro, man. You were awesome to talk to. Thanks for putting in all that hard work, and it was a lot of fun talking about this topic.
Yeah, it was awesome meeting you, Mark. I had a blast. You too, Calvin. This was great.
All right, now that we've gotten the chance to say goodnight to everybody, let's get everyone's contact information. Let's start off with Ro.
Okay, my name's Ro. I'm Paperboy311 on Twitter. I'm hashtagging Commander to Walker, chronicling my games. It's usually about every weekend what you can expect to see any updates on that, because I'm not playing much during the work week. If you want to email me, it's paperboy311@yahoo.com. And yeah, that's it.
Okay. Mark?
If you want to email me, my email is just MAHLERMA, super creative, is my last name and my initials, @gmail.com.
Okay, and my name is Calvin. I'm also known as Captain Resume on the internet. If you're looking for me, you can always find me over on Twitter, CaptainResume@gmail.com. You can always, on Twitter, it's @CaptainResume. You can hit me from email at CaptainResume@gmail.com. This is CommanderCast. You can email us directly, CommanderCast@gmail.com, or you can tweet @CommanderCast. We also have a Facebook page, which is ran by Judson and myself. You know, whenever something interesting comes up involving Commander or anything even slightly Magic-related that might be influencing the format, usually we throw something up there. We also have Tumblr. Oh, wait, no, here it is. It's you can check on Tumblr @CommanderCast.tumblr.com. There we go. That's the link. It's also in the show notes. Let's see. Thanks to everyone who contributes to our site. That's about it. Our music for the show is brought to you from 331E Rock. It's his X Meets Metal series. And that's it for this week's episode. We're done with community, strategy, and technology. And everybody knows I'm not going to say that's live at the end of the show. So, good night, everybody. to need you to read something off for me. Anything that you randomly have, like a card or something.
Oh, okay.
It could be anything. Just, yeah.
You draw a card, then discard a card from your hand.
Okay, Mark?
To Deputy Press Secretary Andrew Hatcher, codenamed Winner at the White House. Winner, Winner, this is Warrior. Sorry.
I'm assuming that's from a book, isn't it?
I just picked up a random copy of Esquire I had laying around. I just opened up to a random page.
And I've got a... You hear my
phone? You hear that baby in the background?
Yeah, a little bit.
I'm going to go kick that girl's butt. The only thing about this particular episode that I had like a little bit of worry about going into it is the idea of it being a little bit so close to the Planeswalker episode we did like 2 weeks ago.
Right.
But in the same token, like, this is the show William wanted to do, and by the time he told me he wasn't going to be here, I didn't have time to come up with anything else, and I already had like a specialist like on Planeswalkers as commander, so I was like, you know what, hey, it's a little late, too late to change up now.
No, I think it's worth
discussing. There's actually a lot to it.
Yeah, and you guys were mostly talking about the Super Friends.
Yeah, just talking about like this Planeswalkers and the Super Friends.
Yeah, that's kind of a different animal, I think, because I mean the Super Friends deck is just a collection of Super Friends, you know, and Planeswalkers versus. I mean, I don't think you guys, if I remember, I don't think you guys covered using one as commander. So.
Especially
I think it's a different enough topic.
Like, we only briefly discussed it, like, in the community segment, but that was the episode that got broken into two episodes.
Yes, right.
Because it was so damn massive. Like, literally, like, you guys have no idea. When I got that thing and I looked at it, it was like 4.5 hours long.
Oh my God.
And I was like, there's no way in the hell anyone's gonna sit here and listen to us talk about news for 1.5 hours and then do an entire show. Alright. Everybody set?
Yep.
All set.
Alright. Let me clear my throat a little bit because I'm gonna have to do this intro alone. Alone! William, where are you, you bastard?
Doesn't he always mess it up though? So.
Yeah, he usually does, but it's
you
like.
Nowhere to go but up.
Hmm?
Nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, I got nowhere. Like, can't get any worse.
Are you gonna give us a link or do I need to look this up?
Well, I found it on MTG Cell. Actually, I just found it at the top of the site from the community poll. But
I got them both on. All three of the cards are on the Facebook group for Commander.
Oh, cool.
I linked them up this morning as soon as they got spoiled.
Man, I should check our own Facebook page.
Yeah, like you can. Yeah, like if you're not on it, go right ahead and click on CommanderCast. Go to Facebook. Facebook, I believe, is facebook.com/CommanderCast. And you can go right ahead. Anytime something even slightly involving a legend gets spoiled, either Judson or myself fix that bad boy up and slaps it up there and lets people talk about it. It's actually the legends and these spoiler cards are usually the main things that get like the most views on our site. I put this thing up, let's see here, about 8 hours ago and it already has like, I believe 200 views.
Nice.
That's one of the things I was thinking about, because the main reason I don't play with blue is because I suck when it comes to counter magic.
Yeah, it's hard.
and I've voiced this, you know, I know my flaws, I know my weaknesses, and when it comes to it, I prefer kill spells over counter spells. Mainly because if a creature hits the board, and I have a murder in my hand, I always have the option to kill it.
Yeah, there's nothing simpler than murder.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. No, yeah. I mean, Calvin, I'm right there with you. Like, I prefer to be proactive rather than reactive. I'm not a control player. You know, every once in a while I'll dabble, but, you know, I've got 3 mono blue decks. I've got 2 counter spells in between those 3 decks. Yep. You know, I play, Mistform Ultimus, which is just hilarious.
Mm.
I play Lorthos the Tidemaker, and then when I feel like being mean or someone decides they want to play Grand Arbiter, then I play my Memnarch deck. And, you know, Memnarch doesn't want anything counter because he wants to steal everything, and the other guys are just big dumb beaters, so.
Yeah, I had a Memnarch build. I filled the whole thing. The whole thing was, infinite combos. It was pretty bad. because there's billions of ways to go infinite blue mana with artifacts and stuff.
The only blue deck I ever actually built was a Tauriad deck, and even then, it's like I had to like take it apart because like when I was playing it, I never really felt like I was playing it correctly.
Yep, I know.
I always feel like, you know, like if I'm going to use this effect, I'm going to get at the end I'm going to get the 2/2 flying drakes. But was that a spell that I needed to cast now?
Right.
Should I have waited?
It has that effect where when you win the game, you feel like a genius. But when you lose, you feel like there's many decisions I could have made differently. Whereas
yeah.
when you're an aggressive deck, it's just like, I smash, that's it.
I attacked. What more do you want?
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, like I turn things sideways. Isn't that the point of the game?
I have a feeling later on I'm going to have to break into my own house.
Jesus.
The living room has two doors on it. I was in the living room. I think I set the keys down on a table, and apparently one of the kids locked the living room door, and the keys are still in the living room. So shortly after this is over with, I'm going to have to go downstairs and figure out a way to break into my mom's living room so I can get the keys and lock the door back. Karn can technically be in the same place as another Karn.
Oh, Jesus. I can't even keep track of the chronology of the Terminator movies. I don't think we can get into this.
Yeah, I'm not much of a Warthos guy. I don't know.
Yeah, I could, you should have seen me when I'm at work. Quick side note, this is going to be a little side rant. You should see me, when I'm at work with my old manager before he, resigned. Me and him would come in and be Sunday. It's just me and him, and we would sit there for 4 hours trying to just talk time stamps, time logic, time this and that. There we would talk about Terminator, and we would talk about Doctor Who, and we would just go through all the various groups of stuff just to make sense of stuff. And we actually
I would start with Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure personally.
Yeah. The one thing, my favorite theory that we came up with though was that Doc Brown is a murderer. And it's the only way that we could actually make sense of how things happen in the Back to the Future trilogy.
Hey, Calvin, have you ever seen the movie Primer?
No.
Oh, man. But you've got I think it's on Netflix still. You got to go watch it. I mean, it's the kind of movie you literally need a flowchart to understand, but I think you'll dig it. If time travel is your thing, do yourself a favor. It's a little independent movie from early 2000s or something. It's just Primer. Primer. Yep.
All right, I'm gonna check that out as soon as I get off of here. Because the main thing for Doc Brown is that if you watch the Back to the Future movies, there's Marty, and Marty's going through the past and through the future and meeting himself. But once everything's quote unquote fixed, and in the first movie, and he gets back to the future and he sees himself going into the future, that's not his current time zone. If you watch it, the trees have been changed, there's little details has been changed, the family he's with is not his original family. So there is technically a second Marty traveling through time that was supposed to be from that time. And the only theory we could come up with is Doc Brown found some way to take that Marty and use the time machine and send him somewhere so he would die so the quote unquote other Marty would still be able to survive.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Kind of the Prestige type deal.
That's exactly what I was thinking, man. Oh, man. So, right behind those giant speakers, Doc Brown's just got, jugs and jugs of dead Martys.
Yeah, just dead sample, bottles of dead Martys just floating around his lap.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's funny.
Well, it was the only way we could actually come up with a reason why the other Martys never came back to the present to fix what was going on.
Why Marty
in the present never really came across any other Martys, aside from the quote-unquote one he saw jump in the car.
I love how you went straight to Doc Brown, though. Not Biff murdered him on the skateboard or something, or whatever.
The reason we went with Doc is because if Marty went back into the past, back to 1965, he became friends with Doc Brown. Doc Brown would have, a good, 20 years between 1965 and when he actually meets Marty in 1985. And as a scientist, he would more likely come up with the idea, if I do this, the Marty I met in 1965 will be here. But once he gets here, the new Marty from this time is going to want to come back. And I can't have them both come back here because that would destroy the time-space continuum. So the only option is to send that Marty somewhere where he would never be able to return.
So in the backyard, there's just a lonely life preserver on a cross. Is that
yep.
what you're trying to tell me?
Yeah, and that's where he keeps the original Marty from that time frame.
That's awesome.
Okay, so back into magic.
That's magic.
I'm sorry. We have to do something like that because if we
that was
don't,
a great
we won't
conversation.
Have,
I like
well,
it.
Well, if we don't have something like that to put at the end of the episode, people get pissed. I get more complaints about stuff not being at the end of the episode than what actually happens in the episode.
They will not be sorry this week. I mean, Calvin, you guys used to do the tag team commander, right?
So, yeah, boy.
Yeah, so what's the difference now? So who cares? You know, you throw in a planeswalker. I mean, what's the big deal?
Well, that's something. Like, it's one of the, well, my main thing for it is, like, you know, we mainly came up with, Cassidy came up with the tag team commander concept, and I personally loved it because it gave you a chance to build four color decks.
Yeah, I remember that episode.
And that was, like, my favorite thing about that particular format, because it's like, oh, man, I could actually build a deck with all the cards I want without having to use some five-color legend that I'm never going to use, or whatever the case may be, and I can actually go ahead and play something I want to do, and I don't even have to include the color I don't want. It's like, if I want to play red, green, white, and black, I don't even have to look at blue. I don't have to worry about trying to cast my general with a blue in it, nothing.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And it was amazing. Yeah. And I still highly recommend it to anyone. If you guys want to try something different, like, you know, we're talking about a variant format right now. If you're trying something else, go ahead, try, you know, pick two legends. Whatever the colors are, and it's basically the same concept. They both go into command zone together, and you can only have one at a time. When one dies, you can put them back, use the other one. And I forgot what the tag team rule was, but I think it was you had to pay the cost and sacrifice your commander, but he had to go to command zone or something. I forget what the details for it was. It's been a while since I've used it.
No, yeah, I remember that. A lot of fun.
Quick side note, I was talking with Scotty Mack in a chat. He just recently popped on as someone about this episode, and he was like, oh, yeah, like, what's going on? I was like, no, just sitting here talking about walkers as commanders. He's like, ah, must be miserable. It's like, actually, no, it sounds actually kind of fun. And his only response was, you know, loads gun and surge in the mouth. Scotty Mack is like a huge, like, he completely hates the idea of, like, planeswalkers being your commander.
You know, the original Andy would probably hate this too.
Oh, yeah, Andy would totally, like, if this actually became an actual rule, Andy would talk about it for one episode. It would have been done, and then the next episode, Commander Cash would have been over. He'd have done it for completion's sake, and then just left.
I love Andy.
No. Man, you know, I said it before, you know, there's gotta be a Venn diagram of the guys who just, like, you know, it seems like these planeswalkers would make the game really interesting, a little more fair. I mean, you know, I would rather see Venser Sojourner at the head of a blink deck than almost any other blink general, you know what I mean?
Yes!
But at the same time, like, there are these people who are just like, they just hate planeswalkers, like, every fiber of their being, man, and I've never understood that. Like, I used to play back in the day, too, and, like, I love planeswalkers. Man, cards back in the day sucked. You know, I was happy that Juggernaut got reprinted in this set, because that was a good card to run in revised block, man. Like, yeah. That, like, a 5-3, oh my god, like, and it still got lightning bolted every damn time I played it, but oh my god, something with 5 toughness was amazing. And now, like, people just lost their shit over planeswalkers, and still when I play online, I still play a lot on Modo, you know? And, like, the number one, like, in the comment section rule is, like, no planeswalkers. Like,
I play on there too. Oh my god. I play on there too, and I saw that. I've seen that.
I never understood the hate for that, man. It's just so hilarious to me. I remember Andy, it's so funny you brought that up. I was thinking that too. Like, Andy hated planeswalkers. And I know, so many people hate them. I've never understood the hate for planeswalkers. I've never done it. I don't know.
Listen, you can't tell me you were playing planeswalkers and you didn't include. It happens.
But, yeah, let me put out there right now that, I don't know everything and I would love to have some more input.
Like, yeah, if you have any complaints, go right ahead and send those to jack@mtgcast.com. All right, that's enough, like, plugs for other people's show.
What is it, just Paperboy 311?
Oh, my Twitter? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, are you on Twitter?
No, you know, I'm an English teacher in the real, so, like, I teach high school kids, so I don't go on. I have a Twitter account and a Facebook account, but, man,
but
I'm never on there.
He's not giving that up.
No, I do not. Ooh, yeah. No.
Like, last thing he wants is his students finding up. Oh, hey, look, there's a picture of Professor Mark with his silky voice tossing back beers. Look at that.
We try not to do that. I got enough, you know, teenagers I got to worry about what they're doing on social media.
Yeah, that makes sense.
For them to see what I'm doing on social media. So.
The only thing is, I might now think of you as a baby when I see because of your picture. Because it lights up every time you say something, so it's like, I don't know, you see this weird, like, the baby's talking to me.
Yeah, that's my daughter.
It's time travel. Calvin went back, that's time travel as a little kid. now like Doc Brown's gonna have to kill him.
Oh no.
You always thought that TARDIS sound effect at the end of the show was like a sound effect. No, that's my actual like modes of transportation. That's how I get to work every day.
ManderCast.com.